This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wasn't worth it even. I'm worth 100,000. Not dollars, but diamonds. I am mud out the bayou. Rip a page out the Bible. Come and crucify me. I'm a long way from home, and this ain't Yellowstone. I trade a white bitch for catfish and yellow bones. This from the catacombs. This for the broken homes. From the south side of cities where my granny home. I move to California, I bring a Grammy home. I call the bill collectors, leave my fucking family alone. We left the corner store on the way to Caviar. The coupe is mustard colored, what the fuck is Grape Poupon?
Young K.A., never quit your day job. I bring the love to work, I need the day off. I need the this hard work should pay off. The lights stay off until my mind is made up. A young Zuckerberg, I wake up and make stuff. These niggas copy us, they really need to pay us. I'm from the city where your neighbors fight back. You talking shit, we bring that work right to your lap. I love my niggas like white people love rap. We make this shit, you probably never stay on track again.
It is January 5th, 2018, and this is part one of the four-part series this year for our matches of the year. The top 120 matches of 2017. Ugh. I have quit in Moody, and I have made a grave mistake.
You're telling me.
Brock is here. Brock, why did I do this?
You did this because you waited until the last minute to make your list and was like, oh shit, I got all these matches I want to talk about that they don't make it into my top 100, and you strong-armed me into doing a four-parter episode of a thing we were joking about last year that was going to kill us. So now if last year didn't do us off, it's going to do it this year.
What Brock is referring to is that I did wait till the last minute to make my list.
Gosh.
But
which is funny, because last year you were way more prepared than me, yes, and I made a last year. I made a last minute list, right. So the tables have turned.
Yeah, so what happened was I made my list last minute, and when I got to towards the end of my list, I was just looking at the things in my match of the year document, mm-hmm. and I had this feeling of guilt that I would not be able to talk about certain matches.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I wanted to be able to squeeze those in, knowing that I probably wouldn't hear much about a lot of them anywhere else. So that's where the 120 came from. Brock made a top 200 match list that he'll be posting on his personal blog.
Because I'm a psycho.
So be thankful that we're not actually doing that, because I actually do not know how many parts that would take.
Yeah, that'd be a while. That'd be a long time.
That would be an entire week's worth of audio.
Oh, Jesus. 7 days.
But we're here for the top 100 matches. 120 matches.
120. You better say it right.
Of 2017. We all know how making a list works. There's no special criteria. What you like the most is what's going to be on your list. So,
Mostly.
For the most. I mean, I do have a couple of honorable mentions that I didn't like them a lot, but they do mean some. But they do mean something to me in the respect that I couldn't squeeze them on my list because realistically the match wasn't good enough to warrant that. Mm-hmm. But there is some kind of emotional attachment to that match happening. So I guess I should address those matches real quick then.
Okay.
One of them being Fred Yehi versus Walter from Evolve 90.
Oh, cool. Didn't make my... I don't think I made my top 200, so we're good.
Mm-hmm. Didn't make my list, and I liked it a lot live. I was there live. It was in Joppa, Maryland, and I got to see Walter, which was fucking mm-hmm. cool. So I've been like a huge Walter fan for years, and seeing Walter live is something I never imagined I'd be able to do. I mean, at least in America. Like, I always had dreamed of, like, visiting Germany to go to a WXW show, but seeing Walter in America is something I never thought I'd be able to experience, so that was mm-hmm. really fucking cool for me. And the match was good, too.
Had you seen Fred before?
Yeah. Fred's been on all the Joppa shows, I think.
Okay.
Another honorable mention that for a while was actually going to be my 200, because this match makes me feel so weird, is Roman Reigns versus Undertaker from WrestleMania.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Controversial.
So this match makes me feel weird because it's not a good match by any means.
Sure.
But I think it's also way more impactful and emotional because it wasn't a good match. Because it was an actively bad match.
Mm-hmm.
Because Undertaker goes out on such a whimper, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not because he goes out on a whimper. It's because Undertaker is a big part of my wrestling fandom. Sort of a blanket. He was there ever since I started watching wrestling, you know, which was way back in like 2000, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there ever since. Like, not a regular this entire time, obviously, but he's been there. So watching him have this moment to leave his jacket and hat in the ring was emotional for me. And for an hour or so, I just sat there in my basement with nothing on, just like thinking that, like, holy shit, like that entire like part of my life is like gone in some ways. He like represented like a whole like section of me, like getting into wrestling and learning about wrestling. And now that I'm old enough, I have to see like these people retire now, which is weird to say.
How did that match compare to you compared to the streak ending?
With the streak ending, it did shock me.
Yeah.
But it was also a match that actually was bad to me, that it put me to sleep. I think I've told you before.
Really?
Yeah, that match put me to sleep.
That's hilarious. Alive.
And I did watch it since, and it's not like, still not good.
Did you conk out for the whole show?
No, I woke up after that. I woke up after that match.
I was like, "Did you watch Brian winning late? Like, that's crazy."
No, I fell asleep during that match, and then I only woke up when Brock Lesnar hit that last F5.
Okay,
and then I looked at my screen as the ref was counting three, and once his hand hit the mat on the last one, I'm like, "What the fuck just happened?
This is a dream?"
Yeah, really. I was like, "Am I sleeping?"
Yeah,
but yeah, I just wanted to mention that because I was like, the Roman Taker match is not that good.
Sure. But,
you know, it did get a genuine emotional reaction out of me that a lot of these good matches on my list weren't able to get. And a lot of that is due to, like, you know, years and years and years and seeing someone.
Mm-hmm.
The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 25 is like the match that made me realize how much I really, really love wrestling.
Mm hmm.
So to see at least like this other half of that match just retire now too, definitely does a lot to me. But did you have any other mentions you want to mention before we get to the list proper?
Not really, because like I did obviously make this top 200 list, and you will be able to find it at some point in the month of January over on my blog at Brock Hates Wrestling on WordPress. There's not necessarily anything that I need to talk about here, and I feel like I'm going to talk about a couple of these matches because you're going to have them higher than me. But if you're interested at all at seeing what the fuck I filled out the rest of my top 200 with, head over to my blog in a couple of weeks.
All right. You did say you had some statistics that you wanted to talk about.
I did. Because I like numbers, and I like lists, and I like factoids, and just a weirdly specific guy like that. And so out of my top 200, I broke down like percentage wise, how many matches are represented by certain performers, how many matches are represented by certain promotions. And Quentin, I wanted you to guess which promotion is represented most here on my top 200 matches.
I feel like the safe bet is probably WXW. But I think CWF Mid-Atlantic is probably a good shot, too.
Neither one of those is correct.
Hmm.
WXW was tied for second with New Japan at 20 each. CWF Mid-Atlantic came out at a strong fifth with 12. Number four, related to my number one, is NXT with 17. And number one, bafflingly, is main roster WWE with 23 matches.
What the fuck?
So here's the thing. They put on so much wrestling. I counted it up between Raw, SmackDown, 205 Live, NXT, 20 pay-per-views throughout the year or something. and excluding the Mae Young Classic and the UK Championship shows, all those shows throughout the year, WWE had like upwards of 425 hours of footage released this year, or well, 2017. And the next highest after them was New Japan, which had somewhere around 300 conservatively. I think it's a little under 300, but they probably broke 300. And it's like when you're putting on that much wrestling, and I watched a ton of it, like I watched upwards of 100 WWE matches in 2017, you're just going to have a lot of good stuff on there. But it's crazy, like between WWE and NXT, as well as the Mae Young Classic and the UK title tournament, like one in five matches on my top 200 is like WWE affiliated, which is bananas if you know who I am.
Yeah, and even like beyond that, like I thought 2016 was a better year in the ring for WWE as far as like even like in, excuse me, in NXT and on the main roster, and the Cruiserweight Classic was better than the Mae Young Classic.
Oh, totally. Gosh, not even close.
Yeah, so that's what, so that's what I was thinking, like,
Well, I watched so much more wrestling in 2017 than I ever have before. Right. Like, on my blog, I uploaded 800 matches, and I watched, like, I review a little under half of what I watch, and I only uploaded, like, 200 matches in 2016, which is not to say that's not all the reviews I wrote. I actually didn't post a lot of reviews from 2016 because, like, I got it in my head that they should be posted in order that they happened, and when I tried to do that and tried to review things in order, I just got such a backlog, and it was just a stupid idea. Those are going to go up eventually. But, like, I just watched so much more wrestling, and WWE and New Japan also, like, benefited heavily from it.
Right. So I guess with that out the way, are you ready to get started here?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to, like, stay with the whole thing of I'll say a match if you have it higher, blah, 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 blah. So my 120 is Aussie Open and Amari versus Never Say Die and Connor Mills from Progress, Chapter 56.
Did not have this match. I'm not sure that I actually watched it. I didn't watch a whole lot of Progress after their big Ali Pally show.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I think this match is really cool for me. Obviously, being a very big Aussie Open fan, you know, hear me gush about Kyle Fletcher, Mark Davis, on the Top 50 Wrestlers of the Year podcast with Tim. And I really like Amari, too. But Never Say Die, which are Knuckle Lock School guys, and so is Connor Mills, they're really talented workers, too. So when you get these young, up-and-coming wrestlers in the UK scene and just put them in a trios match, you get something that feels completely unique and is just full of fun and great action, a lot of chippiness, a great closing stretch, a great crowd.
And yeah, the crowd was nuts for it, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Crowd was nuts for it, way hotter than you would ever think. And it was just a really damn good trios match that felt unique to this, unique to Progress in general, honestly. I can't remember a match like this happening maybe ever in the company where it's just a trios match full of young guys just going out there and killing it. Almost like in a rival school kind of way with the Fight Club Pro Academy and the Knuckle Locks guys. But yeah, really fun stuff. I understand why people may have missed this because following Chase the Sun, a lot of people felt burned by Progress in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really great match. Obviously, there's a lot of Progress on my list, mainly because like the booking fucking sucked a lot of the year. But and I also don't hold that against the guys going out there wrestling, and there was a lot of fucking good wrestling on these Progress shows.
Progress actually came in tied for 7th place on my list of most matches. So that was your 120, my 120, and on this first episode, we're going to be running through numbers 120 through 91. We're going to tackle it in four quarters here. My 120 is Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns from WWE's Fastlane.
All right, not on my list, but I thought this was probably their best match.
Really? Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. I have, I think, two of them higher. This was obviously the first match. I don't think it was the first. It's not the first match they've ever had. I think this was the first singles of those to ever make tape. But anywho, this was like the first chapter in one of my favorite feuds throughout 2017. It's kind of weird because they already felt like they were old rivals. They were like reversals and reversals of reversals and like just enough familiarity that it felt a little too convenient for a first time match. But I took that meaning that Roman had to use all of his wits to try to survive against like just an unstoppable monster like Braun Strowman. And outside of like the more dramatic WWE elements of, you know, commentary freaking out and big facials, I thought this ruled. Like it was just a nice little slugfest of a match, kicked off their feud in a great way. And I mean, they show up a lot on my list, so I'm glad to have them here.
Oh yeah. Every Braun Strowman Roman Reigns match I really enjoyed. I think the one I may probably enjoy the least was the Last Man Standing match.
Oh, Quentin, killing me.
And that's mainly like due to the finish. But like, yeah, I thought
the Last Man Standing finish was great. I'm gonna talk about it later.
All right. So my 119 is Kushida versus Ryusuke Taguchi from New Japan Best of Super Juniors Night 11.
I think I watched like 2 Best of the Super Juniors matches, so this is all you.
If you've seen a Kushida versus Ryusuke Taguchi match, like you know that this was just really fucking good. Mm-hmm. These guys have tremendous chemistry. Other than Minoru Tanaka, Kushida is probably Taguchi's best opponent, I would say. Mm-hmm. And Taguchi's up there with Kushida's best opponent, so you could argue that he's number one. Both guys very great at targeting a limb, great at creating drama down the stretch, and having brutal-looking offense. Taguchi, I think people have eased up on him over the years, but he used to get a lot of shit. And I always tell people that when Taguchi wants to turn it on, he is one of the absolute best wrestlers in the company.
I think he's sort of eased off on it too, though, is the thing.
Yeah, I think, kind of. I mean, like, this name of his, like, kind of faction is Taguchi Japan and the whole Super 69 thing, like.
Well, Super 69 is a good point, but it's not like, but Japan or something, you know?
True. But yeah, it's like a lot of smart, savvy mat work, some smart limb targeting, great drama. What'd you expect from these two? Not a lot to say there, but if you missed this because this was like deep into the Best of the Super Juniors tour, I don't blame you, but I would definitely recommend checking this out.
All right, so that was your number 119. My 119 is something you might have higher, but I'm not sure. It's something that I know you enjoyed regardless. It's Zack Sabre Jr. versus Mike Quackenbush from Chikara's Bad Wolf.
No, I did not have it on my list, although I really enjoyed it. I think I liked the...
We're going to talk about that one later.
Yeah, okay.
This was the first of a series of 2 matches these two had in 2017. And it was just the story of 2 sort of remarkably similar wrestlers, at least in terms of like British-flavored and Japanese-flavored grappling. And they have a friendly little technical match. Quack is mostly retired these days and had just a surprise match here against an old friend. But as Zach is wont to do, he threw a temper tantrum and things got a little lippy, and it was awesome. It got a little sloppy towards the end, but it was just the first match in a series, and they tightened it up in the second one, and I'm looking forward to talking about that one later.
Yeah, Zach and his temper tantrums, even when facing Mike Quackenbush, you know, that temper does start to flare, which is definitely like a high point in most of the matches that I have on my list from Zach. My number 118 may be my most controversial one, so to speak. Because it is from a very, very acclaimed feud that happened in the WWE this year. My number 118 is the only match from this feud, actually. It's the Usos versus the New Day from WWE SummerSlam.
I did not have any of their matches higher. I was not all that impressed with them.
I think I gave all of their matches that happened on pay-per-view 4 stars or better this year.
I really very enjoy, popular.
Yeah, I really enjoy these matches. A lot of people gave some of these matches 5 stars. But this one, I think, stood out to me the most for just the complete lunacy and the fact that they did this on the pre-show of a pay-per-view.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, you know, these guys, for some reason, just didn't make the cut for the main show, and they went out there on the pre-show and just absolutely killed it, and in my opinion, had the best match that was on that card.
And this is the highest of the matches from this feud that you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. What makes this one better than, say, their Hell in a Cell match?
I think the Hell in a Cell one kind of gets goofy when it doesn't need to be, with the whole, like, I guess, like, colored kendo sticks and other spots.
Sure.
It kind of gets goofy when it doesn't need to be. Battleground has the Xavier Woods story, which for a lot of people would probably make that the number one match. And Money in the Bank, I think the finish was actually pretty smart and a good way to set up the rest of the year for them. But I just thought this was probably the most complete match they had.
Okay.
All right, you can go ahead. You're 118 now.
My 118 is the first of a number of CWF Mid-Atlantic matches, and it's Trevor Lee in a six-pack challenge taking on Kane Justice, Eric Andrews, Chip Day, Smith Garrett, and Otto Schwantz for the CWF Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship.
I have this way higher.
Way higher. Okay, we'll talk about it later then, and I'll transition to my 117, which is a last man standing match that was needlessly disparaged earlier. It's not the one you mentioned, but it's Matt Riddle taking on Keith Lee at Evolve 94.
All right, I did not think you were that big a fan of the Matt Riddle Keith Lee like combination.
I actually really enjoyed it. Like, it's there was something in my review of this that I went into that I think is bullshit, but I believe it. And it's the idea that, like, Matt Riddle and Keith Lee work well together because they're just two, like, two behemoths, two gods colliding with each other. And one of my biggest complaints about Riddle is usually that his selling is sort of non-existent for me. He usually flits between, you know, just walking around normally in the ring and dead selling, and he does a whole lot of that here. Though he does have some good gut selling late in this match. But here I thought that sort of thing was really effective because it sells this idea that Riddle is such a Superman that, like, you have to knock him unconscious in order to keep him down for any significant period of time. Right. And I like that sort of idea way better in a last man standing match where guys aren't kicking out of moves every, you know, 20 seconds. I'm just a sucker for the gimmick anyway. They do all sorts of bombs here. It looks great. This was easily the highlight of, like, of Evolve post, like, April, like, when they had not an insignificant downturn. Really enjoyable match, just a fun little bomb fest. I like to see Keith Lee win the big one, even though winning the big one in Evolve as we transition it to 2018 don't mean a whole lot. But I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think I like their first match more, but this was definitely really good, and I enjoyed the finish a lot.
They were all good. All four of their matches throughout the year were really good.
Mm-hmm. My number 117 is Timothy Thatcher versus Donovan Dijak from Progress New York.
I like this a lot, but it didn't. I don't think I made my list at all.
In a phenomenal year for Timothy Thatcher, I thought this was one of the most interesting matches he had, for the fact that this was like a pure styles clash on paper that you would not know what to expect from it. And in front of this really hot. No, in both ways.
Literally.
No, this can go both ways. In front of the really hot Progress crowd in New York, I thought Timothy Thatcher did some phenomenal heel work. Donovan Dijak did some great selling of his arm. And overall, just great stuff. Timothy Thatcher is always great for facial expressions and awesome targeted offense. Donovan Dijak, despite his size, is always just much better as a babyface. He just sells in a way that is very convincing. He can fight from underneath, and Timothy Thatcher is a big dude who can put a beating on him. So it was believable watching Timothy Thatcher start to rip him apart.
I remember it being just like a weird match, partially due to that style clash, but also due to just the fact that they're two big, lanky, awkward sort of dudes. But, like, I did really enjoy it. It's two guys I liked a lot. And, I mean, even past just, like, the weirdness of the matchup itself, like, it was really enjoyable.
My 116 is Shima versus Ryu Saito from Dragon Gate, May 27th during the King of Gate tour.
I don't know. I don't remember if I saw this, so you have to take it.
I think I might have said I think I might have recommended it to you, saying it was like surprisingly great. And I still stand by this. This is a surprisingly awesome match between two of the earliest guys of the Toriumon Dragon Gate system. Right, Saito doesn't have these kind of matches that often, even though he just had a really good match with Masaki Mochizuki at Final Gate. But yeah, it was really refreshing to just see these guys go out there and just kind of like turn back the clock and just have this awesome match in the middle of a tour that you would not expect.
Okay. I've definitely, that's not the only time we're going to talk about Shima in the King of Gate tournament this year. My 116 was a match that was kind of surprising that I liked it. Like, it was a match that I think a lot of people didn't enjoy, and I did, which isn't an uncommon thing, truthfully. But it was weird that I liked this sort of match in particular when other people didn't. And it's Hideo Itami versus Aleister Black from NXT TakeOver Brooklyn.
I did like that match a lot.
Okay. Did it not make your list at all?
No, not make my list, but out of everybody that I saw, in at least an hour ago, I think I was like always like the sort of apologist for it. Like, what are you guys talking about? This was probably the best they could do in WWE.
This was, I think it was just like a cool confluence of stories and just actual good match content. The story of this one is that, like, over the spring and summer, like, ever since he came back from injury, Hideo Itami has just been a total douchebag. Like, came back with a chip on his shoulder due to the fact that that fucking shoulder has been shitty to him for 2 years. And went on a tear, like, did pretty well, got himself, you know, a title match at NXT TakeOver, what, Chicago? But was just really aggressive, was utilizing all sorts of dirty tactics throughout the year, was sometimes just outright cheating, was, like, trying to hurt people at certain times, just being a real prick. And so he comes face-to-face here with Aleister Black, who has been established as NXT's hot new like squash match killer guy. And I don't like the fact, this happened several times with Black throughout the year, and it bothered me every time, that so soon after his debut they would have him going like 50-50 in a match with just some random guy when he's supposed to be like the killer of the promotion. But with someone like Itami very specifically, like this guy who A, is a tremendous striker on his own, and B, has like recently developed a mean streak in which he's pulling out all these nasty tricks, I really enjoyed seeing him beat down on Black. Mostly he just utilizes a headlock because you can't get your head kicked off when you've got your guy in a headlock. And like, I understand if people didn't enjoy that, but like, it really, like, it was really fun to me to see like Black get really pissed off of it as he's like sitting in this headlock. He's bleeding from the nose, got his nose busted open at some point, and he's just slowly getting more and more angry, and eventually explodes and takes out Itami. Itami at the end is like, he's doing some face washes, I think, and he's screaming at Black, and he's screaming at the crowd to like, respect me. But the thing is, like, he doesn't deserve respect after, like, all the months of his chicanery. And Black just kills him with the, what's it called? The Black Mass? The spinning heel kick? Okay. So he just kills him with a gross kick. And, like, there's, I think, a common complaint about this match, and with, you know, many strike-based matches these days, really, is that they're too, like, dancey, they're too twirly, they're too thigh-slap-happy. And there was certainly some of that here, but like, for the most part, these two were like belting each other with strikes, and like that last one was real good, and it ended off a match that I found myself enjoying against all the odds.
I feel like it's always weird, at least with like these kind of guys, even like on Mike Bailey, mm-hmm. people will say like, oh man, this kicking is kind of, it's a little too fancy, and it's like, well, that's kind of like the nature of like the martial art itself.
Sure,
you know, totally. Like something like kickboxing, something like taekwondo, they're just naturally pretty flashy for a martial art. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I get it. And I think a lot of the complaint was, too, is that on paper, if you just think about it from like a nerd standpoint, this is Tommy Yen versus Kenta. Oh, my God, they're going to kick the shit out of each other.
Totally.
And, like, Hideo's older and worn down. Aleister just got there. He's probably being told to tone it down a bit. So yeah, you weren't going to get like some kind of like TJ Perkins versus like Zack Sabre Jr. kind of like mock battle arts kind of match.
Sure.
Like, but you did get something that was really good and something that I was really surprised that a lot of people were just so down on.
It was a nice end for the Itami character too, because if I'm not mistaken, I think this was his last TV appearance. It was either this or like a Cassius Ohno match like the week after.
Yeah, might have been a Cassius Ohno match.
And then he takes a couple months off and shows up in the main roster. And yeah, and I thought that was just a nice little story of like him coming back from an injury that kept him on the shelf for the better part of 2 years, being just super pissed off, like wasting through a whole bunch of the roster, which we're going to talk about later in a couple high profile matches, and eventually coming face to face with like the one guy who can now kick him, and he just kills him.
All right, so my 115 is Etchicero versus Kaifan from Tijuana. Don't know the promotion's name, but this is from January 7th.
Yeah, I don't think I watched this, sadly.
Yeah, this came out early in 2017, obviously. It actually was first aired on like a Facebook live stream.
Nice.
So, yeah, that was really fun. But, yeah, this was two of my favorite guys in Lucha having an awesome mat-based match. For the first two falls, whenever somebody picked up the win there, he would always play some music in between, and that was just kind of like a weird like aesthetic thing that made it really cool.
Okay.
But yeah, I really like the mat work here. And Lucha with the 2-3 fall step is always really going to come down to escalation and how you escalate the match. And you could tell throughout the falls that they were getting a little bit more violent and aggressive with each other. So by the time the 3rd fall comes around, getting some chops, getting some bigger moves. So yeah, I really enjoyed it here. I think Kaifan is very underappreciated in general. I'm sad that he's going to be gone for a while. And Etchicero is one of the absolute best wrestlers in the world. So really, you just couldn't go wrong here with this match at all.
This was like a real bad beginning of the year for Lucha. As like Negro Casas, Black Terry Jr., Negro Navarro, and Kaifan all got hurt and will be gone for significant periods of time.
Yeah, this is losing those guys on the indies, and they were always like highlights.
Totally.
You know, that definitely hurts a lot, especially when CMLL isn't, you know, always exactly going to give you what you need, and AAA is AAA. So, you know, what's your 115?
My 115 is a match some people will probably think is way too low, but I don't know. It was a match that sort of surprised me and impressed me, but also baffled me. And it's Fred Yehi versus Brian Cage from FIP's Ascension 2017.
This barely missed my list.
Oh, really? Okay. So if you've ever seen a Fred Yehi match, you know how this one goes. He takes a lesser opponent and slots him into all sorts of completely unique and completely interesting tropes. Like I hesitate to say tropes, really, because like only Fred Yehi does them. So if it's only something you see one person do, I'm not sure if you can say it's like a greater, you know, a greater trend. But like he takes Brian Cage, a guy who's got like more HGH than blood running through his veins, and he makes sure that he sticks to what he knows. Like he just does his power stuff, and keeps the match real hot. And Fred just scrambles around for any foothold he can get against this giant dude trying to take the belt from him, until he finally slaps on a hold that Cage, as big as he is, just can't escape. And that's all it was. And it was so simple, but it was like shockingly good. And the crowd was incredibly hot for it. Mm-hmm. Like this tiny little crowd in Ybor City, in like the Orpheum, like the smallest building ever,
with nobody in the crowd.
Nobody, like 30 people maybe, and it's like they were just screaming for it, and it was, I don't know, like this wasn't my favorite Brian Cage match ever, but it's like the best Brian Cage match ever. I think I can say that with like some clarity and with some what's the word I'm looking for? But whatever, like I'm pretty sure this is the best match Brian Cage has ever had, and it wasn't like I don't think it was even the fifth best Fred Yehi match this year. I was really impressed by it. I don't know. Like, there was something about it that, like, I think it just threw me off with how simple it was. Mm-hmm. That it didn't get higher on my list, but it's a really good match.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Definitely one of those matches that early on in the year was making Fred Yehi one of those, like, mm-hmm. very, very tippy top, like, wrestler of the year kind of, like, wrestler of the year kind of guys. Yeah. Because he was doing it against guys like Brian Cage and Teddy Stigma. Even someone like what'd you say?
Everybody was into that Teddy Stigma match. It was so weird.
Yeah,
I don't know why everyone watched that show.
I think that was like the first FIP show of the year.
Yeah, it was Everything Burns, and Gabe went on that like weird Twitter spiel about it, where FIP was going to be super edgy, and I guess that actually drew people to watch the show because everyone watched it.
I think I watched 3 full FIP shows this year.
I think that was the only one I watched full, but I watched a couple, yeah.
Yeah, like the Teddy Stigma match and the Brian Cage match were like putting Fred Yehi up in that, oh my god, like this guy is like up there. Like he is going to be like the main guy the whole year. And for all people, he should probably still is number one. And that is a more than viable pick because he had like a whole lot of volume this year.
Totally.
And, yeah, very, very smart match that I enjoyed a lot. My number 114. Is something you might have higher, but I'm not sure. Ringkampf versus Bobby Guns and Jackson Stone from WXW Broken Rules.
Ooh, actually, let me see where I have that. Gonna have to control F. Nope, I have it lower.
Ooh, okay.
I had it at 154.
Oh, right. I was definitely expecting this to sneak on your list somewhere. Not super high. I thought it may be at a spot. But all right. This is the conclusion of this Ringkampf versus Bobby Guns feud. Jackson mm-hmm. Stone is here and he's good, but like it's Ringkampf versus Bobby Guns.
Is he? I think this was the first time I ever saw him.
He's good. Like, but this is Ringkampf versus Bobby Guns. Bobby Guns just being a disrespectful asshole. Mm-hmm. In the build, Bobby Guns put out a cigarette in Timothy Thatcher's eye. So you know, we get that explains like the Timothy Thatcher eye patch that we saw him wearing across multiple promotions, which yeah. is something I did not expect.
Tim's a professional, if nothing else.
He's committed. But yeah, this is a no disqualification elimination match. Mm-hmm. And if you know anything about Timothy Thatcher, you know that he has roots in deathmatch, hardcore wrestling, whatever you want to call it. So this wasn't foreign to him. Walter has done his fair share of stipulation matches too. But Bobby Guns more than held his own here, and Jackson Stone, for while he was there, I thought he was good too.
Yeah.
This match does pick up once Jackson Stone is eliminated. But what I do think is like the most important thing here is Ringkampf came in as the babyfaces. They were being wronged, they were being harassed and disrespected by Bobby Guns.
Guns, who like I don't think I'd put him on a list, but like straight up one of the best heels in the world at the yeah. moment. Like, just a total shithead.
Mm-hmm. Just being completely disrespected and harassed by this fucking prick of a dude. And once the Ringkampf gets the advantage and they're just beating the living shit out of Bobby Guns, you can hear the announcers and you can hear the crowd kind of start to turn and they're like, hey guys, this is like a little too much here.
Yeah.
Not even that it's too much, it's also for the fact that Bobby Guns is surviving, because when you put someone at the disadvantage in an elimination match, mm-hmm. you know, just wrestling
against two people who are way bigger than him, too.
Yeah, like against two big, menacing-looking dudes.
Yeah.
You do kind of be like, oh, all right, this is like the baby face. We're supposed to cheer for him. This is like the big comeback moment. And Bobby gets flashes, but it's Ringkampf just dominating the hell out of him, mm-hmm. making him pay for his sins. And trying to teach him a lesson. And there are some great visuals here. I thought this was one of the best Timothy Thatcher performances of the year. Mm-hmm. For as much shit as he gets for being emotionless from people. Although I covered that in bulk on the South sure. of the Year podcast. Him ripping off the eye patch and his face after he gets stomped into the thumbtacks and has a thumbtack stuck in his in the bridge of his nose for the rest of the match. You know, those are tremendous visuals. But we get that and a brutal finish from Walter on Bobby Guns. And this was like the catalyst of this sort of Bobby Guns almost face turn kind of anti-hero space yeah. that we're in now, where a lot of people think he's going to join Ringkampf. I don't know if or when that's going to happen, but this match definitely set it in motion. We're having Bobby play this valiant character while also keeping his edge as like this disrespectful punk, which is something that like you can kind of say like they did with like Orton in like 2004.
Sure.
But they also went right back to Orton being a
This really like it's not out of the world to say that this was Bobby Gunn's like Orton Foley.
Yeah.
Aside from being just a great, no, maybe not great, but aside from being like a real good, like hardcore match, this is just like a really interesting character moment where this isn't a double turn.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ring Camp doesn't go back to being heels here. Bobby Gunn doesn't turn face, but like
Bobby Gunn deserved what he got.
Mm-hmm, totally, 100%. But it's like it's an added layer on top of each character, and like there's fallout from it. Like Ring Camp like discuss between themselves, like maybe we pushed it a little far here. And I think like this leads directly into them like starting to buddy up to Monster Consulting, like trying to branch out into a wilder side of wrestling. And it's like it was just super interesting. Like for anybody who wants to follow WXW or has followed WXW, this is a really appealing match.
All right, so what's your 114?
My 114, sort of a similar thing in that it's a one-sided beatdown in a hardcore match. It is Nick Gage versus Jimmy Lloyd from GCW's Tournament of Survival 2.
Mm, all right.
You didn't have this, I imagine?
No, I didn't have this, although I did enjoy it.
Best squash match of the year. Though, I mean, I have like two higher than this, actually. But just a tremendous little squash match between like one of the best like weird looking baby faces in the world, and that's an archetype I really enjoy. Jimmy Lloyd is just super fun as this like
does he look weirder than Kyle Fletcher?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Fletcher looks like just a tall, lanky sort of person. Jimmy Lloyd doesn't totally look human. Like he looks like a toad man.
Like, toad, I mean, that was a pretty fair description.
Yeah, and I mean that with love. Like he's a cool guy. But he just got so much charisma for a little toad man, and he gets the dog shit beat out of him by Nick Gage here. Nick Gage, who's having his first match in like 21 months or something, like in a significant period of time, doesn't look like he's taking a day off, comes in, cleans house, hits what was the best looking face wash I ever saw until the finals of that same tournament. And we'll talk about that one later. Hits a gross looking pile driver too. Just like all sorts of nasty stuff. It's just a hot one-sided beatdown for 8 minutes in front of an adoring crowd. And like, that's all I want in wrestling.
Yeah, this was, I don't even think my favorite first round match that happened in terms of Tournament Survival. But sure. I can definitely see why it stood out, with it being Nick's first match back and just, like, the sheer, like, brutality of, like, all right, I'm here, fuck this new guy, all right. my number 113, I don't think you saw this match, but I would recommend going out of your way to see it at some point during the year. It is Maximum versus Tribe Vanguard from Dragon Gate Final Gate.
Yeah, I didn't watch Final Gate before this show. It's on my list of stuff to watch after the podcast.
So the Maximum team,
this was the trios match, right? You said
trying to match. So
yeah.
This was, these were the teams of Jason Lee, Masato Yoshino, and Naruki Doi versus KZ, Yamato, and BB Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And this is some classic Triangle Gate action right here. Like it's kind of rare that we get Triangle Gate matches these good these days, which is a shame because, you know, they're pretty much like it used to be the main title in the promotion.
It's it's like the thing that Dragon Gate was the best at for years.
Mm-hmm. And I thought the one from Kobe World last year was really good, and there's been some good ones in between, but this is the best one in a while. Would be higher if I had got to see it like before I started composing the bulk of my list.
Sure.
But it's like a kind of star-making performance for Jason Lee here, who's been fucking phenomenal since coming to Dragon Gate.
Yeah,
like he was good in the Cruiserweight Classic, but he's like,
I guess
I thought his match was with Swan was good.
Was it Swan? Okay,
it was like he's like been in like inexplicably like fucking awesome.
Yeah, like showing tons of character, tons of like poise. Like he didn't look like a guy who could carry himself in I was gonna say the Mae Young Classic, but in the Cruiserweight Classic. But like he walks right into Dragon Gate and it's perfect. It's so bizarre, but I love to see it.
Yeah. Obviously, with speed muscle involved in the master, you know, there's some high speed, high octane offense that looks fucking phenomenal. Although down the stretch, we get Yoshino kind of getting fired up and throwing a hell of a lariat down the stretch on,
always good.
Yeah, I believe it was BB Hulk. KZ was fucking awesome here. Another match where KZ doesn't take the fall, which is interesting because a lot of people are thinking that KZ is probably getting a Dreamgate shot this year. Which I am fully on board with.
Yeah.
But, fucking phenomenal Triangle Gate match. I understand that it happened late in the year, but I would recommend anybody go back and watch it if they have not seen it yet. December, surprisingly busy month in 2017.
I was going to ask you because, like, we did talk about this, that, like, December 2017 was, like, stacked compared to Decembers of past years. Do you think you had any, like, late year bias on your list?
Maybe for one match that I have really high, but all of the stuff that I have, I guess, like what would we be calling like late in the year, like November, December kind of stuff.
I guess, yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's matches on here from that time or what I saw in that window. A few of them actually coming up shortly, but. Yeah, I don't think I got that many of them up super highly. Maybe if I had like more time to sit with them, I don't know. But there's like sometimes when I just see something, I like them a lot. Like my versus EO last year from December, I was like, I saw that immediately. Went, all right, that's top 10.
Yeah.
So which I 113.
My 113 is a match I know you liked. Not totally sure it's going to make your list. It is the first Zach Gibson versus Jack Sexsmith match from Progress Chapter 44.
No, did not make my list, but really enjoyed it in this match. You know, we keep saying this, but like Jack Sexsmith and like Juice Robinson are always like guys where it's like, oh, this is like the breakout match for this guy. But like this was the singles match where you're like, oh my God, Jack Sexsmith he actually has something here.
I'd enjoyed him before this in Progress.
I did too. I think like the South Pacific Power Trip tables match was the first match where people were like, oh man, like he is.
Was it 2016?
Yeah, that was 2016.
Okay, I didn't see it, yeah.
It was a tables match against TK and Travis, in which like for some reason a tag team table tornado match was actually really good. And that was like the first one where people started noticing Jack, but you can go on now.
Well, it's like I've enjoyed him, not just because of his character, but because he's just like, he's an infectious sort of guy. Plays a really simple like underdog role, like and stays in his lane well. I sort of had like mixed feelings about like the various aspects of the gimmick, like the Mr. Kako shit, and specifically coming as a bisexual person. There's some weirdness there for me. But here he walks in with my favorite heel in the world, the best heel in the world, Zach Gibson, and has a no nonsense match that is just so good. Like immediately the best thing that happened in Progress at that time in 2017. Actually felt like a match where like two colorful characters were trying to win a match as opposed to just like doing a whole bunch of spots. Real emotional thing. The crowd gets involved and like throws Jack back in the ring at one point to avoid a count out. But it's a heartbreaker, and thankfully it's only like the first chapter in a multi-part series of matches, but it's a heartbreaker that ends with Gibson hitting his Helter Skelter, which is I guess just a jackhammer.
It's like a twisting brainbuster.
A twisting brainbuster, sure. He hits that on the floor and wins by count out, and it's real sad stuff. But it's the first part in.
It's necessary.
It's necessary, and it makes for a match that I have stupid high on my list. And we're gonna talk about that on Monday.
One that I have really high too. All right. My 112 is Johnny Gargano versus Andrade Cien Almas from NXT TakeOver Brooklyn.
I didn't get this one. You're going to have to explain it to me.
Obviously, this being the first match on a takeover for Gargano since the turn.
Mm-hmm.
Gargano sort of like trying to work his way up into contention and try to get mm-hmm. over what happened to him in Chicago. And Andrade Almas, who's been on the upswing since something like Chicago. And I think this was something that we didn't know where this was exactly going just on paper. And then this wound up being Johnny Gargano being proven and still not be over what happened to him. So kind of having some kind of like a panic or stress at the even thought of Tommaso Ciampa mm-hmm. and Andrade Almas and Zelina Vega taking advantage of it. And Zelina Vega was great playing the manager on the outside who gets involved, gets some offense of her own.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Andrade was really good, taking shortcuts and any opportunity he could get. Andrade, whenever, I think it's always like understated, like he can throw some really damn good strikes, whether it be his forearms, yeah. his chops. He can throw some strikes. And Gargano is really slick, and obviously Andrade is slick. So I think they just, I don't know, they just came together really well here for me. I don't think it's like a perfect match by any means. I'm not sure it's a great match,
sure.
but I think this was very much setting something up, and I don't think that we really knew that when we watched this. But when you look back on it now, with the context that this is going to be the NXT title match in a few weeks of the Royal Rumble weekend.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Like, this is very much setting something up, and I think they'll have a lot to play with at that Royal Rumble match because of something like this.
Okay. I don't know. I thought it was fine. It was just I saw people going gaga over it, and I didn't get it.
Didn't have to do with the fact that you're not as big a Gargano fan as everybody else.
True, that's very true. And like, I don't know. I'm not huge on Almas either. He's great. Like, I like him, but I don't know. No,
like,
no.
I love the finish. I thought it was like some real simple stuff, and some
totally.
People thought it was like too WWE, which I didn't really get.
Yeah.
Like just like something simple as like throwing a shirt. And he like looked over for a second, and he was like,
"That's all it takes."
Yeah. All right. You're 112.
My 112 is another WWE match, and it's from earlier in the year. It's American Alpha taking on the Wyatt family on SmackDown on January the 10th.
Don't think I ever saw this.
Okay, you should. It's real good. real belter of a tag title match here. It's only like 10 minutes long, and for once, everybody came to play. Like, for once, Randy Orton is motivated. Bray Wyatt is motivated. Per usual, Jason Jordan and Chad Gable are motivated. And they just infuse this short little TV title match with tons of heart, tons of effort. Everyone's putting like a little extra stank on all of their strikes and whatnot. They're really just leaning into stuff. There's a point in this where Jason's making his hot tag and he's going to hit a clothesline on old Bray Wyatt. And he's like stumbling. He's tripping over himself to hit this clothesline, and he just smacks him with it so hard. And if Bray was like a second too late coming off the ropes or something, he'd just fall on his face. But they did it in such the perfect way that it was, I don't know, it was great. Like, there's so much fire in this. One of my favorite TV matches of the year. Mm. It was nice to see everybody like firing on all cylinders for once. They played with a cool team dynamic because, like, Jason Jordan and Chad Gable are, like, so much more established as a team, but individually, Randy or Bray can just totally swamp either one of them if they get in a one-on-one situation. And it was, I loved it. It was just a great little tag.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I'll ever get around to seeing it this year.
Sure. It's SmackDown, whatever.
Maybe when we do the 2016 retrospective.
Yeah. 2017. But yeah.
My 111 is...
excuse me. 111st.
Well, excuse me. My apologies. My 111 is Toxin versus Arcalis from Lucha Miss. Never got the date for that show. Just know it happened.
Let me look it up.
Yeah. Just know it happened at Lucha MMS. This was a match I told a lot of people to watch. I harassed uh-huh. people. Said, I don't know what y'all are doing, but this Lucha MMS show is really good.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of really good stuff happened here. And this is like the Ultimate Lucha Variety Match. Mm-hmm. Sort of with some really neat, intricate, fancy, flashy mat work, some great submissions.
Sold remarkably well by Toxine.
Yeah.
Like, it blew me away. Like, lucha selling isn't something that I'm usually super into, but, like, knocked me on my ass.
And then we then transition into some more hard-hitting action here, mm-hmm. which on the indies and lucha, you can actually expect to see, like, plenty of. These guys do hit pretty fucking hard.
Yeah.
And then, I guess, the final stage is we get some more exciting, high-flying stuff. And I think this really just showed the variety that lucha has, other than, like, having, like, some bloody brawl portion. Like, they hit, like, every single base
yeah.
that you could, like, ask for in lucha, or what you tell somebody lucha can be. They gave you, like, everything.
This was from March the 25th for people looking for it. Mm-hmm. I forget. I just looked at it. Whatever. I'm not going back for it. I don't know what venue this was, but it was this tiny little building with like tiered seating. Like, there were people up in a balcony, like a nice intimate little venue, and somebody had a drum and was just like drumming away on this beat late in this match, and it was like, it was intoxicating. Like, it was such a good thing. I only had it at like 154, which like belies its quality, I guess, but really, really standout lucha match in a year that there wasn't a whole lot of that.
Mm-hmm. You won 11.
My 111 is a rematch. We've been talking a whole bunch about first matches in a series of matches, but this is a rematch of a series of two, and it's King Justice taking on Dominic Guarini from CWF Mid-Atlantic's 80s night, also known as Saturday Night CWF.
You can go ahead, because I do have some kind of like thoughts in general okay. about these matches to get off.
So this was... this is a rematch of a blow-away great February match that we're going to talk about a lot later. Continues to stay in the spirit of the first match in that it is, like, so unique, so fresh. Like, two young guys who are really fresh into wrestling, who have martial arts experience and use it in a way in professional wrestling that we've never really seen before. They come at like the most simple moves in such a refreshing way. Like, something as simple as a drop kick is like blow away great. This is the smaller of the two matches. This one only goes about 6 minutes, I think, to the February matches, like 10. But they pack a lot in there. It shows Greeny, who's, actually the more experienced of the two, but less crafty. Greeny learning from his mistakes from the previous match, but still like fumbling with some of the pro wrestling tropes that like he's not super used to yet. And eventually coming out in the win when he takes advantage of Kane Justice's cockiness. And it was like, even in just like a 6 minute little thing, like it was so different that I couldn't not have it on my list.
Would you call any of their matches together shoot style matches?
So this was something that got brought up various different places. I saw it most recently on the We Don't Know Wrestling forums. I don't know that I'd call this shoot style. I think there is some credence to the idea that shoot style has a cultural history within Japan, and that truthfully you cannot have authentic shoot style outside of it. But like, this is like the damn closest thing you're ever going to see to Yuki Ishikawa in like the Tar Heel State, you know? Like, this is about as close as you're ever going to see it.
You see, I never got that watching these matches, and they're good. Mm-hmm. I thought a lot of them were made by like Kane Justice's character work.
Totally. He's exceptional.
But watching this, I did feel like it was kind of weird that like people are kind of like overlooking these sloppy exchanges of trying to interweave like sort totally. Of like typical indie spots that you would kind of expect like a Kyle O'Reilly to do or something.
Sure.
And kind of like
just, oh, you're killing it. Killing it.
I'm just thinking like these guys kind of got passes on stuff that sort of like Kyle O'Reilly would get killed for.
I think that's completely fair. Yeah.
So that's why I was asking exactly where we would place this.
It definitely is like a sloppy match. These two are less than 2 years in the business each by this point.
Do you think that's part of the appeal, that it has like this kind of like sloppy kind of danger to it?
I try to hesitate saying yes, this was appealing because it was sloppy. But I don't know. There is something to that idea in that, like, even like the way that they're bumping, it's not like the way that you're quote unquote taught to bump,
right,
in wrestling school, but it's a more natural sort of bumping. It's the way that you'd see guys bump in a dojo when they're sparring or something. And it, like, there's something appealing in that, to be sure. And in just like a different approach. And maybe part of that different approach was something that was less polished than what you're going to see in most wrestling. But, I don't know. I guess 10 years into my wrestling fandom, I just want something different.
You know, just asking, and I guess, like, try to, like, have some kind of discussion about it, since every time I've seen somebody, people talk about this match.
It's just always praise, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just, like, asking here. But I enjoyed the match a lot, too. I enjoyed the first match more. Spoiler, it's not on my list, but I really enjoyed it.
Oh, killing me, Gwen.
My 110, something you might have on your list, I'm not sure. T-Hawk versus Takahiro Yamamura from Dragon Gate, April 7th.
I have this a significant amount higher.
All right. Well, you can go ahead then.
My 110, then, is a match that you might have higher. I know you definitely really enjoyed it. It was Roman Reigns defending his newly won Intercontinental title against Jason Jordan on the December 4th episode of Raw.
That'll be coming up shortly.
Okay, cool.
All right. My 109 is Hiromu Takahashi versus Ryusuke Taguchi from the New Japan 45th Anniversary Show.
Okay, I didn't see this.
All right. So this is in the middle of this awesome, hot Hiromu run where he comes across like the biggest star in the company.
Yep.
Where
the fuck it up?
off of beating Kushida at Wrestle Kingdom 11. That incredible match with Dragon Lee at New Beginning in Osaka. And now Taguchi has stepped up to him. And the story here is Taguchi took it to Hiromu, and Hiromu did not know how to react. He didn't know what to expect. He didn't expect Taguchi to be on his ass like this.
Sure.
Just working over that leg and staying on him viciously and constantly. He almost like put Hiromu in a position like be a sympathetic baby face the way he was taking an ass kicking. His facial expressions I love them, but I can see people thinking they're kind of over the top and over dramatic. Mm. But the way Taguchi was hounding him, I think they were completely warranted that he'd be panicking, in a lot of pain, not knowing how to react, didn't have space. So yeah, I really love Taguchi's performance here. And I thought Hiromu, in what is essentially a babyface performance, was really good too. And you still get the nutty Hiromu Takahashi spots that you want, but they didn't come as early as you would think because Taguchi was just all over him and not giving him any room to like don't do these crazy erratic decisions that he likes to make.
Okay. One of my favorite things about this whole LIJ run is that these guys are coming back to this promotion, or in Sanada's case, debuting in the promotion, and they're radically different than they used to be. So, like, you have something we might touch on later, like Ibushi having his first match with Naito and being like, what the fuck? What happened to the Naito I knew in, like, 2013? Or Hiromu, in this case, where, like, Taguchi knew him as, like, a young boy, and all of a sudden he's, like, the hotness, and it's like, whoa, where'd this come from? An evil, like, completely reinventing himself. It's been a really cool thing in New Japan, and despite the fact that I have like 20 matches from them on my list, there's not a whole lot of things that I call really cool in New Japan these days.
Right. What's your 109?
My 109 is something you have to have it higher. You gave me shit for where I had it. It's Zack Sabre versus Chuck Taylor from PWG's Pushing Forward Back.
No, it's not on my list, I don't think.
You gave me
I didn't give you shit for this. What happened was I remembered your emotional reaction to that match, and I was thinking, huh, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Because you asked me where I had it, and I said it didn't make my top 100. And this was back in the glory days when we were only doing 100.
Which was only like 2 days ago.
Truthfully, yes. But you were flabbergasted. Shocked, amazed.
Yes, every sentence impossible. Yes, I was, and I said this because knowing your reaction to this match, because I remember we both watched this for the first time, like, at the same time.
Adorably, we did.
Yeah, somehow we watched this at the same time. I think we had watched it before we did the Kenny Omega podcast.
Uh-huh.
And you told me that you even said on the podcast, like, you cried watching that match.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, like, because it got such an emotional reaction out of you, that had to be somewhere on your list. That's why I was so confused.
It is. It's on my top 200. It's not on the 100. There's stuff in this that isn't, like, the cleanest in the world. And there's just a whole bunch of stuff I enjoyed more. It was a decent year for wrestling, I guess.
All right, look. This was a great match. Like, it should have been on my list, but I think I took it off at some point and forgot to put it back on. That's a mistake on my end. But it's a great match. The pop win, Chuck wins is fucking
incredible. Yeah, this is another one of those, like, it's bullshit, but I believe it things. In that, like, I think this match is a great meta narrative. In that it is so apparent that Chuck Taylor is not world champion caliber. He's not championship material. And Zach is just so out of his fucking league. And it was something that was apparent in their first match, in which Chuck was very nervous and applied a game plan. And as soon as it failed, he had nothing left and didn't know what to do and got pretty handily beat. And the same thing is happening here, where, like, he's coming in this, like, his head's down. He's not the jovial Chuck Taylor we know and love. He's pacing around awkwardly. He's trying to
mat wrestle with Zach.
Yeah, he's, like, trying futilely. Like, when his name gets announced, he, like, grimaces instead of, like, smiling or posing. He's totally out of his element. In more ways than one. Like, here's a fun fact. Chuck Taylor, before this match, in the 5 years before this match, only had 9 one-on-one singles title matches, excluding these two PWG title matches. 9 singles title matches in 5 years.
Yeah.
By this point in July 2017, Zach had 19 in the year. Like, we're talking about, like, not different ballparks, not different leagues. Like, these are different sports these two guys are playing. And they run with this sort of story where, like, Chuck can't use the game plan that he used back in February because it failed. He can't out-wrestle Zach. He can't, like, just beat Zach. He's not as strong or as physical as Zach. He can't use the game plan that his partner Trent used to beat Zach in that tag match in March that we're going to talk about later, because when it came down to a one-on-one meeting between Trent and Zach, Zach beat him. So, like, he's got nothing. He's got to, like hunker down. He's got to turtle up. He's got to weather the storm and just, you know, look for his openings. And throughout this match, like, Zach is just laying into him with chops, and Chuck is just laughing at him, asking for more, because what else is he going to do? And this continues. Zach just kills him with all sorts of holds, with all sorts of strikes. Eventually, after Chuck keeps getting his foot on the bottom rope, he forces one of the ring crew members to remove the bottom rope and then chokes Chuck with it. And then applies another hold, and Chuck just gets his foot on the middle rope this time. And Zach is just getting increasingly frustrated. We talked about his temper tantrums earlier. He's really pissed off here. He hits Chuck with a belt. He low blows him. He's like begging Rick Knox, referee Rick Knox, to disqualify him, but Knox won't do it.
I think Knox, like, verbatim says, like, no, you just hit him with the fucking belt, and the crowd.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where the PWG crowd, for some reason, was not making any noise.
Sure.
So you just hear Rick Knox saying that completely perfectly, and then the pop of him saying it, like, comes in.
And, like, they weren't making noise because this is, like, a weird, bullshit-laden, methodical, like, depressing sort of match. And it's not, like, it's not the typical sort of, like, PWG excitement, high spot sort of thing. Like, I don't... These matches were well-received by the crowd, but, like, not in the way that you think most PWG matches would be.
They were way more well-received by the VOD crowd.
Totally. And it's very specifically... very obviously because of Chuck, just because he's not this sort of person. But, like, through it all, Chuck survives. Like, he gets put through some thumbtacks, and survives it all. And eventually, eventually Zach's got him in a what's it called, a triangle choke, and he picks him up and power bombs him down.
For a reference, that's what Zach beat him with in their first match.
Yeah, it's true. Did not make a note of that. But he power bombs Zach down into these thumbtacks, and he hits him with like a really awkward looking, a really like unsafe looking, awful waffle pile driver.
Zach takes pile drivers in such a way where like I feel like he does it safely, but the way his body falls, because he's such a flexible, lanky dude, it just looks fucking nasty.
You know how I feel about his bumping.
I know, but like you, even with the Chris Hero matches, you would point out like, oh my god, like Zach
gruesome. Yeah, but Chuck hits him with the pile driver, and he wins, and he's like slumped over. In such like Zach fell in such a way with this weird looking pile driver that Chuck is like sitting on his ass and just leans back over top of him. He can't even really like apply a pinfall, can't like hook a leg or anything. And so Rick Knox counts to three and Chuck sits up a little bit. And we're seeing this from the handy cam, from like the handheld camera at ringside, and they cut to the hard cam so you can get a reaction shot of the crowd, and the crowd explodes, and they're all dancing for joy and chanting and screaming and whatnot. And you... I'm going to choke up thinking about this. Jesus. They cut back to the ringside cam, and Chuck has like sat up from where he was leaning over Zach and is slumped down against the mat, and he's got his face turned to the side so you can see him, and he's just beaming, and it
all you see is a smile.
Yeah, like he's just laughing at the absurdity.
He's like Jesus fucking Christ, I just won this title, this is like, stupid.
and it like it is stupid, like so many people would call it stupid. Like I had friends of mine who were legitimately angry about this.
I know, like, that's about, like what Chuck's saying. Like he's like, they really gave me this title.
Yeah, but like specifically for me, and this is my list. Fuck off. Specifically for me, like to see my guy win this thing that like he had no business winning, and it's something that like he had truthfully worked for so long. To see that like finally happen was just. Was great, and it overcomes like any of the numerous problems this match has. Like it's a nice emotional payoff, and that's what I watch wrestling for.
And other than like Chuck Taylor just being somebody that everybody wants to see, like, you know, succeed and have that moment, he's sort of the last relic of that old PWG era.
Uh-huh.
He's like the last guy left. You could argue like someone like Sami Callihan, but Sami Callihan was away for a while, obviously, sure, due to being signed. Brian Cage somewhat, but Chuck Taylor really was like the last guy standing. And so to see him kind of like have this year long, maybe longer build of him inexplicably winning matches, and then we actually get to the point where he is in title contention, in the main feud in PWG, one of the most heated series of matches probably in PWG history, I would say.
Uh-huh.
And he gets to have this moment in the sun. I said it on the Wrestlers of the Year podcast that this was Chuck Taylor's gold watch year, and like he deserved it. Like he earned it. He, even if like he wasn't going to have an actual reign, which I think everybody going into that match like kind of like knew he wouldn't have.
Totally. But,
like he deserved that moment.
Yeah, and it felt great. Like it really felt great.
But yeah, other than like my mistake on my end, deleting it and never putting it back, would be higher on my list. But I just fucked up. But see, this is why I wanted you to talk about it, because see where we are now.
Yeah.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Play Simulations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceMination.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceMination.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceMination.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
My 108 is Roman Reigns versus Jason Jordan from Raw, December 4th.
Let me scroll back up to this. You want to talk about it?
All right. So, I didn't watch a lot of WWE TV this year. The least WWE I've watched since, like, God, wow. Like, one of those real bad 2010 kind of years.
Sure.
But Jason Jordan has always been one of my favorite guys to watch. This is going back to FCW, NXT, even the short SmackDown run. I've always adored Jason Jordan, and Roman Reigns is obviously great. So, I think they had a TV match earlier in the year, like September or something, too.
Yep, it was pretty good.
Right. So, I didn't get to see that, so only saw this match. And this was following this segment of Jason Jordan saying he wants to challenge Roman, and Kurt Angle telling him he's not medically cleared, he shouldn't do it. Samoa Joe coming out and him getting involved, Roman coming out, obviously. And Jason Jordan getting fed up with being dismissed as this kid, which is something I pointed out to you like a couple weeks ago, that like Jordan's been wrestling just as long, if not longer, than Roman Reigns.
Yes.
And Roman Reigns is a couple of years older.
Yeah.
So that's, and like, I get it. And like, the whole idea of main roster is a different world, different character. Like, I get it.
Well, Jordan's just also got a baby face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, that's why I was, like, looking at it as someone that was following developmental for so long. They're like, this is fucking weird. But,
it is strange.
But, yeah. Jason Jordan gets fed up with the disrespect. And he belly-to-bellies the hell out of Roman Reigns. And this leads into this match, and Roman Reigns is just beating the absolute shit out of him for most of this match.
Mm-hmm. Long match, too. Like, yeah. something stupid, like the third longest TV match of the year.
Yeah.
It was real long. Mm-hmm. Like, 30 minutes.
But I think they used that time very
super well.
Jason Jordan finding openings. These two, like, not like massive dudes, but they're both strong as fuck. And
yeah,
Jason Jordan just running Roman Reigns from corner to corner just because he can, just to show off. Roman Reigns in, I guess, like, his offense always was great. And Jason, it was a real matchup of explosive guys. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what made this stand out so much. Jason Jordan doesn't really get close, honestly, for as long as this match goes.
Yeah.
Because once Roman Reigns decides he wants to hit that spear, like, it's over.
It's over.
Yeah, it's over. But it was a great match. Best Roman Reigns match I've seen since the Styles matches last year.
Huh, really?
Yeah. I mean, like, again, I like the Braun stuff, but I didn't love it. So this was, like, the best thing he's done since then for me. But, yeah, my favorite TV match of the year, my favorite Roman match, just AJ stuff, all around great stuff.
I really enjoyed this. Like, you only had it, like, two spots higher than me.
Yeah.
What is the word I'm looking for? You just glanced over like a fairly important note to me. Mm-hmm. You talked about how the fact that Jordan wasn't medically cleared, he comes into this match with a bad wheel. He's mm-hmm. got his knee all taped up, and it becomes a focal point of the match.
Yeah,
because during their second commercial break, I think Jordan does a suplex over the ropes. And Roman drags him down with him, and Jordan comes down on the apron on his leg
yeah.
in a real weird way and tweaks his knee. And so they come back from commercial, and Roman's got this this half crab on, and the crowd is going bananas. And eventually Jordan gets the ropes or reverses the move or whatever, and they do a bunch of spots. And it's not until like 90 seconds into the show again that they show you a replay of what happened during the commercial break.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole time I was like, this is weird. Where is this coming from? And that sort of disconnect, like, prevented this from being a great match for me, because, like, as awesome as the finishing stretch is, where they do one of your favorite things, which is a bridging German suplex with the knee in the air, because put your leg down.
Except for all the wrestlers that for some reason won't listen to this podcast.
Travis Banks.
If you want to bridge... If you've been selling your leg the entire match and you do a German suplex and you lift your leg up, I will probably give that match 4 stars.
I call it
the Hoshikawa rule.
It's great. But like, as great as that finishing stretch is, it's like there's sort of a disconnect for me because of the way that commercial break was handled. Though I do recognize that it totally kicks the match up into the next gear.
Mm.
And it's, I don't know, I could see it either way, and it just hit me one particular way. But it's really good match.
All right. So my 107 is...
Oh, we didn't talk about my 108, though.
For some reason I thought we had it at the same spot, but go ahead.
No. We're going to talk about it later, though. I'm almost certain you have it higher. It's a Kazuchika Okada versus Minoru Suzuki from the G1 Climax.
Be a little bit higher.
Okay.
By a little bit, I mean like Monday higher. But yeah. My 107 is Konosuke Takeshita versus Danshoku Dino from DDT October 23rd.
I didn't get to end up seeing this. DDT, I don't know. There's something about DDT... And it's related to, like, my greater exhaustion with, like, the Japanese main event style. Something about DDT either, like, totally blows me away or just bores me to tears.
Right.
And I don't know. I didn't get to see enough of it. I wish I did. But tell me about it.
Whenever Danshoku Dino gets his title match, like he had against Shuji Ishikawa last year that I had absurdly high.
Yeah.
I think he delivers. I think he delivers his kind of, like, different intent of his offense as opposed to like where he's going to be doing the kissing and everything else, like for comedy purposes, because it's meant to be funny. I think in a title match setting, he changes it to where it is somewhat viable offense, which is
sure.
extremely crazy to say. But Takeshita, because he is this stoic kind of guy in this crazy, wacky world of DDT, I think it makes for an interesting matchup. The funny thing is, Takeshita kind of indulges in the craziness, and by the time we get to the closing stretch, Takeshita reveals a swimsuit he's wearing underneath. you know, kind of one you wear when you're like doing bodybuilding competitions and all that.
Massacre.
Right. So I really like the action here. I thought the contrast and personality is what made it great. And then the finish of Takeshita revealing that he can get down with the crazy, silly DDT stuff.
I was scared where you were going with that sentence. Get down with that.
No, no.
I was like,
No. No. He can indulge in the silly DDT stuff too when he wants to. Mm. I thought it was just a really fun match.
Okay. I need to see it. I really should. That was your 107, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my 107 is something I'm not sure that you even saw. It was Sami Callihan defending the AAW title against Kongo Kong.
I never got around to seeing it.
Okay. This is a problematic match. This is a match that would offend some people.
Really?
Rightfully so.
I'm going to need a walkthrough.
Well, it's Sami Callihan, for one.
All right. We're already strike one.
All the baggage in the world. This gross guy just in and out of the ring, and especially in AEW where he's booking himself to be like an absurd caricature of his real-life persona. Sort of gross, but sort of appealing in a different way. We'll talk about it at greater length later. And he's facing off against Kongo Kong, for those of you who aren't aware. Giant black man doing a Savage from the Jungles gimmick in the year of our Lord 2017. And it's like, on paper, it doesn't sound like it'd work, but it does. They just hit each other a bunch, and it's fast-paced, and it's like, it's fun in some way to see this shitty little self-important mousetrap of a champion, like, bounce off the side of the massive Kongo Kong. And there's, like, all sorts of bullshit. Like, there's run-ins from, I think, multiple stables. There's stable infighting. There's managers fighting against each other. There's powder throwing. There's weapons. And it's like in the truest sense of the term, this is a 1985 Abdullah the Butcher match. And like, if you can stomach that sort of thing, I think there is some appeal here. Kongo Kong kicks out at three on the finish. Like, it's as unprofessional as it could get, but it was just like a little roller coaster ride of a match. Awesome little slugfest with just, I don't know, if you like to see the seedier parts of independent wrestling, like this has a real appeal.
Yeah, I didn't really love Callahan's title reign.
Yeah, for good reason.
There's like a lot of stuff going on there. He lost the belt in between this, and then got it right back. It's like, but I do kind of all as one reign, pretty much. But I wasn't really a fan of his stranglehold on the title.
Yeah,
but I guess we'll get into that later because I believe you have at least one match very high from that reign.
Not very, but yeah, we'll talk about it later.
All right. You just mentioned AEW. But my 106 is Fred Yehi versus Shane Strickland from AEW Unstoppable.
I saw this and it didn't hit me the way that I think it hit you. So why don't you tell me about it?
As someone that really enjoyed Shane Strickland in 2016.
In 2016, sure.
Yeah, and as someone that was kind of like disappointed by his output in 2017. This was the Shane Strickland performance I was waiting for. The one I thought he was capable of having.
Uh-huh.
Oddly enough, He has another one of these kind of performances in the Jordan Devlin match that I know that you didn't watch and probably wouldn't watch anyway.
I might have watched. I don't think I did.
Yeah, but and this is Fred Yehi's debut in AEW, and because Fred Yehi is a guy where what he does is so unique and smart and sometimes intricate that you forget that Fred Yehi is very charismatic, over the top, has great looking high impact offense and can resonate with a large portion of the crowd too through that stuff. So what we have here is Shane Strickland trying to keep up with Fred Yehi's creativity, limb targeting, aggressive arm work and everything like that. But he does keep it in his like kind of indie-ish way, obviously. Shane Strickland does have great stuff, like a sort of a go-to-sleep kind of move to his arm, a rolling elbow to an arm, Fred Yehi's typical stomping and throws and things like that. But I think they just mesh really well. I think Fred Yehi is a great base for flying guys.
Totally.
So Shane Strickland, whenever he does want to speed it up, it's not like Fred Yehi can't keep up. So yeah, great match. One that is like sort of typical for Frankie High. I get it. But for someone that was sort of disappointed by Shane Strickland's output in 2017,
mm-hmm.
I left just thinking, damn, like, why couldn't you have been doing this the entire year?
Yeah. That was your 107, correct?
106.
Okay. So my 106 is, I think it was the first match that I watched from 2017. It was a Sami Zayn taking on Braun Strowman in a last man standing match.
All right. I really like this, but didn't make my list. So talk about it.
Two guys I really like. Like, Sami Zayn is legitimately top five wrestler for me ever. And I've really come to enjoy Braun Strowman over the last couple of months, year, I guess. And this was one of the first times that I really got to see Strowman stretch his legs in a character, as opposed to just like in a physical sort of setting. And he did it against one of my favorite guys, and a guy who is exceptionally good at bumping and selling for a larger human being. And they did it in a last man standing setting, one of my favorite stipulations. And it was just tons of fun. At one point, Sammy pulls out like a big lead pipe and he like swings it at Strowman. And Strowman, after he gets hit by it once, puts up his dukes instead of, you know, just this wonderful character moment of like this giant who isn't used to getting hurt like this and doesn't necessarily know how to protect himself. So he does it in like in a boxing sort of setting. I loved it. Like it illustrated so much about who Braun Strowman is to me in that moment. I really enjoyed it. This match contained the best cut, the best edit in WWE history. That sees, I think they're standing on the floor. Strowman tosses Zayn like onto the entrance ramp and like rolling down it towards the ring. And they cut it at such a way between two cameramen who are exceptionally well placed that like, this was in Tampa, Florida. It makes it look like Braun Strowman threw Sammy over the fucking Gulf of Mexico into Alabama. Like it was like across the world. It was incredible stuff. This ends with, I think Strowman hits like a power slam and Sammy nearly gets counted down but makes it up, and then Strowman like buries a couple of knees into his head. And this was like part of an overarching story between Sammy and Mick Foley that was sort of interesting, and I really enjoyed it. It kicked off the year in a great way. It was an interesting match between two guys I love, and it was real good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it a lot. Funny enough, I don't remember how early in the month this happened, but I don't think this was my favorite Sami Zayn TV match of that month. If that Seth Rollins match was
during the way too. I did not willingly watch a Seth Rollins match, so yeah, I don't know about that.
That was a really solid match. You might like it. It wasn't terrible.
Yeah, I'll check it out maybe.
All right, my 105, a match I'm almost certain you have higher. David Starr versus Joey Janela from Beyond Wrestling, Paying Paul.
Yes, I have this significantly higher. Right. Next up at 105, I've got a match I'm not sure you even saw. It was Gunnar Miller versus Matt Riddle from the second round of the Scenic City Invitational.
Oh, I did see it. Didn't make my list.
Okay. So, like, obviously, for anyone who's seen this or even heard any of the discourse around it, this is Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar reimagined as a Southern fried slobber knocker in a little high school gym outside of Chattanooga. And there's something like, I don't know. I think there's something to be said about the negative qualities of a match that is so obviously derivative, but God damn it. This match was so much fun to watch. And even if it was like clearly trying to ape off of something successful from a couple of months before, it was done in a really, really good way that just really impressed me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this match too. The original Goldberg Lesnar did not make my list.
Really? Okay.
So, like, it just, like, neither of those matches, I guess, stood out enough for me to make my list, but I still really enjoyed them.
Was it just the length? Like, what's going on there?
No, not the length, because I have a match that is literally 7 seconds.
That's right, you do.
So, but that is for I guess, the Monday episode.
What? It's that high?
Yeah.
Quinn, that is absurd. Like, I'm judging you right now.
I don't want to hear anything from you.
All right, whatever. I'll talk about my number 104 next. It is Keith Lee taking on David Starr from Evolve 83.
Oh, I didn't think you ever even watched this.
It was a late in the year. I watched this, like, it was probably one of the last 20 matches that I watched.
Yeah.
Really good, though. Like, I love these two guys. And this was a match where, like, I thought this was David Starr's Evolve debut, but it wasn't. He had debuted the previous year at Evolve Nice against Ethan Page in what I assume was a shitty little match.
I remember that match being pretty good.
Whatever.
No, I'm just telling you, like, the reaction. Like, people okay. really like that match.
I'll have to check it out. But Starr shows up here and is, like, clearly trying to make an impact. And this is hardly Keith's first match in Evolve. But this was, like, the first time that I thought that he was really hitting his stride in a match that he would go on to win. And so it's sort of, like, an important match for setting the tone for who he's going to be in Evolve. And clearly he was going to be a big deal. And it's... like, it's just quality stuff. Like, David Starr is so good at wrestling bigger men. He obviously takes things from his matches against Walter, most notably a backdrop into the corner that is still nutty every time I see it. But he changes it up. And, like, this isn't like, paint by numbers, a Starr versus Walter match. This is uniquely David Starr versus Keith Lee. Keith is as charismatic as ever here, just like throwing Starr across the galaxy and giving you a little wink and a nod afterwards. And it was just really good. These guys hitting each other a bunch, doing it in front of a hot little crowd. And for a long time, this was like the last good Evolve match for 2017.
All right, my 104 is a match I'm not sure you saw, but Kyle O'Reilly versus Speedball Mike Bailey from What Culture Pro Wrestling Canadian Qualifiers.
I totally watched that show. I don't think I watched that match, no.
Yeah, this was the main event.
Okay.
Other than it just being a matchup between two of the biggest stars to come out of Canada in the last few years of wrestling, there was some story going on with it, with Kyle O'Reilly facing Tyson Dukes earlier in the match. And, I mean, earlier in the night, excuse me.
Long match.
And it was good, but the main thing was Kyle O'Reilly came in nursing an injury. Mm-hmm. And here we see Kyle O'Reilly and Speedball going at it, but we get to see a different side of Speedball, kind of taking advantage of an injury. Ooh. Going after it, kind of targeting it way more than you would think he would. Okay. And Kyle O'Reilly still being, you know, sort of like this, like, surgical, smart wrestler. When he wants to hone in on something, he'll take that limb and he'll target it the whole match. Mm-hmm. So he tries to go after Speedball's leg. Doesn't really exactly work out for him in the end because Speedball wins. But, like a match that I have later on my list, I would describe it as kind of like this, like, classic ROH dual limb targeting kind of feel.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it's a surprisingly hot crowd. It's smart work. It's exciting. Speedball can keep up with Kyle O'Reilly on the mat, which is something you would not expect. In general, Speedball, I think, showed this year that he can do a lot of really solid mat wrestling. It's just because his base is Taekwondo, you just don't really
see it. You don't see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, great stuff. I enjoyed the hell out of this. I think if it happened in any other promotion in the UK, in like a Rev Pro and a Progress, maybe even a Fight Club Pro, this would be getting way more praise. But because it happened in What Culture, and What Culture has the stigma around it, it just kind of got forgotten. But it's a fucking fantastic match, and I think more people should probably watch it.
Okay. So that was your 104, correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so my 103 is... another WWE match from January. It is something I think was the best sports entertainment match of the year. It's The Miz versus Dean Ambrose from the January 3rd episode of SmackDown.
See, I think I saw this match, and it was good. But out of like the Dean Ambrose versus Miz matches that I saw this year, I had a different one like as my favorite.
Did you have it on your list?
No, it's not on my list. My favorite one was the...
the Extreme Rules one?
Yeah, Extreme Rules match I had.
Really good.
Which a lot of people thought was, like, weirdly long. And I was like, I don't know, like, that felt good that the opener was that long and they got that much time.
I don't remember it being long. But regardless, this was just a real bonkers little TV title match. Two guys who I think know how to do sports entertainment wrestling really well and really put a lot into it here. A whole bunch of shenanigans, a whole bunch of, like, Maurice interference, a whole bunch of, like, the referee trying to throw out the match and someone's like, no, don't do it, or trying to throw somebody out. A whole bunch of just, like, goofy spots, like Miz doing the Bryan Danielson kick gimmick, and Dino ducks one of the kicks, but Miz catches him on the rebound, and it knocks Dean into the ropes so he can do the rebound lariat, and they both like flipped with the move to the point that it was almost like a Spanish fly, but it was just like a really good clothesline, and I just went nuts for it. Like, it was, I don't know, man, they were like hitting all my buttons. It was just a stupid and fun and terribly enjoyable match.
All right. My 103 is CCK versus Aussie Open from Attack Pro Wrestling, the Neon Wrist Block.
Okay, so I watched this, but it didn't make my list.
Right. This match, if you know the context of it, really gets added to, but like the story of the fact that Aussie Open did not know they were going to win the titles.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Yeah. So when you see the referee count three and you see the reactions that Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis have, yeah, those are 100% what the fuck, we're the tag team champions, we just got here.
Best boys.
but these two teams have faced off quite a bit, obviously, with Fletcher and Davis being part of that Fight Club Pro Attack family. So they're very familiar with each other. So that kind of leads to, like, you know, great exchanges, great sequences. The Mark Davis and Kid Lykos interactions are fucking incredible. Uh-huh. If those two have a singles match at some point in the year, probably go gaga over that. Chris Brooks and Fletcher interactions being the two tallest members of their teams. So, like, there's a lot going on. I like the Mark Davis hot tag. It's a lot of great action, and it's really just added to by the fact that these two guys from Australia who did not know each other that well before coming over.
Which is amazing to me. God.
Yes, a lot of people assume that they were, like, best buds, and then they came together.
Because they meshed together so well.
Mm-hmm. It just so happens that they were two Australian wrestlers who came to the Fight Club Pro school at the same time.
And they haven't been tagging long, right?
No, it'll... Like they started, I think they started tagging in, like, maybe, like, May or June.
May or June of 2017?
Yeah. After facing each other a few times.
Like, fucking shit, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah. They're a fucking incredible tag team for as long as they've been together. But yeah, it's really added to by the fact that it was a surprise title change, and it's a feel-good moment that attack like these guys enough to be like, okay, we can give these guys these tag titles and not feel weird about it because they've earned it. The crowd is super into them, and they can carry the workload. So yeah, I really enjoyed this.
Okay, so my 102, in contrast to your Brit Wrest, I challenge you some Southern wrestling. It is Smith Garrett versus C.W. Anderson from CWF Mid-Atlantic's Absolute Justice 2017.
People keep saying C.W. Anderson had, like, a really good year, and, like, I haven't watched too much CWF, so I can't speak to it, but that feels like it's wrong.
Well, okay, it's funny you say that because, like, I never got C.W. Anderson.
I still, like, don't.
Like, anytime I'd ever see him, probably most often in ROH, but, like, in ECW too, you know, like, just around. Anytime I'd see him, I'd be like, I don't see the appeal. Like, he throws some good punches, sure, but, like, 100 guys do that in wrestling, and, like, 100 guys do them better. And, like, I didn't see how this, like, pudgy balding dude was this, like, cerebral killer. Or, like, this just, I don't know. But this match made me get it. Like, I finally, like, it clicked with me. No surprise that it's with my man, Smith Garrett.
Best wrestler in the world.
Best wrestler in the world. Confirm, move over. Confirm. Shinya Hashimoto.
Yeah.
It's just, just an awesome little slugfest. Smith Garrett occupies this space that is like one of my favorite archetypes in wrestling. That's this like
ball guy.
Shut up. It's like this like working class dude who's got like calluses on his hands, and he comes home with a red neck every night. And
so
every time he is, every single example of this person, they do happen to be bald. I don't know why that is.
I'm just saying.
it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, one of my favorite wrestlers ever, Rampage Brown, and now Smith Garrett. Like, just, I love these sorts of guys. And he fits in so well here against C.W. Anderson as this, like, two-year rookie who's got a ton of heart and can throw a mean right hand, but, like, pales in comparison to this dude who has, like, 20 years of experience on him. And, the gimmick here is that if Garrett wins, he gets a shot at CW's PWI Ultra J title. Is that what it is? No, it's one of those.
No, it's like the PWI.
It's one of those. I don't know
what it was, but the Ultra J is the junior title.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's Chet's belt. But he gets a shot at the PWI title, and it's like far and away the biggest match of Smith Garrett's career, and he like really puts us all into this one. And I heard like people who were CW Anderson fans that were like, this was one of his best performances in a long time. And he's like, he's crafty, he's sneaky, he's shitty, he's like really mean here, just like doing everything he can to like dismantle this rookie's arm and put the hurting to him. There's all sorts of like fun, like dancey but still structured in a way that I enjoy, high spot sequences. Rick Converse, who sort of set up this match in a roundabout way, gets involved because he's feuding with CW Anderson, and it's just, I really enjoyed it. Like, it was a match that, like, I didn't expect I would enjoy at all, despite the fact that it was, like, my guy in here. And I came away, like, with a newfound interest in someone who I had never understood before.
Anyway, I saw the match. I liked it. But, again, like, the CW Anderson thing, still, sure. It's like, still don't get it.
I hear you.
But I do love Smith Garrett, and yeah. I do love, like all the stories that he has going into his matches. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, this was solid stuff. All right. My 102 is Tyler Bate versus Travis Banks from the Progress Wrestling Super Strong Style 16 Finals.
I did not have this.
I get why.
Sure.
I totally get why. There's a lot going on.
I don't remember this one so well.
Right. But if someone even said this, they didn't like this match or it was a bad match, I get it. There's a lot going on here. It's a lot of kind of like WWE-style dramatics, I would say. Goes pretty fucking long after like all having these long shows to begin with.
Yeah.
But as someone that does watch a lot of British wrestling, and you know if you know the history of Tyler Bate and Travis Banks, mm-hmm. Tyler Bate was Travis Banks' rival, sort of big obstacle in Fight Club Pro. He couldn't beat this guy, always lost to him, on top of just losing to everybody in that company in general. So when Travis Banks finally is on his way to winning the Infinity Cup in Fight Club Pro, he pins Tyler Bate in one of the four-way matches on the show to go to the final, you know, getting over that last obstacle before going to the final. Now Tyler Bate is his last obstacle here, and knowing each other so well, they obviously have some great chemistry, great sequences, great action. Athletically, they match up really well, with Travis Banks sort of having like this dangerous, high-paced quality to him, but Tyler Bate having the all-around skill set, the power, the speed,
just being like a fucking prodigy.
Yeah, he has all that going for him. So Travis Banks relies on a lot of heart, and some people that heart can come across as inauthentic because the commentary team won't let it be authentic.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I was able to get past it for this match. There is interference from British Strong Style, from CCK that had just debuted at the chapter show before this. So their surprise, return, so to speak, was very welcome to go out there and help Travis Banks. And it was the first time they acknowledged that CCK was Brooks, Lycos, and Banks, and not just Brooks and Lycos.
Yeah.
So, real feel-good moment. One of the first signs that British Strong Style probably wouldn't be too long as like a heel unit, because after they go, after Travis Banks wins the match, Tyler Bate is kind of just on the stage, looks back and kind of like gives a thumbs up before going away. So it's a good match. I like the action of it. I can see people, some people saying it's too long. Some people saying, you know, it's just not that engaging. The interference took them out of it. There's a lot I can see having a problem with. But for me, it just came together, and I really enjoyed seeing Travis Banks get that moment.
Okay, okay. My number 101 is a match I don't think you're going to have, and it's probably something that's a little the cause for some controversy based on where I have it, but it's the SummerSlam main event of Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman versus Samoa Joe.
You're not on my list.
Okay. Certainly not a perfect match. I'm not one of those people who's like calling for Lesnar's blood or anything, but this is where he first really starts to show that like he's losing it to some degree. And I think Roman and Joe don't necessarily do a whole lot here, at least in comparison to Braun Strowman, who has
this is a Braun show.
Yeah, totally. He is an exceptionally good knight. But like between the four of them, there's more than enough horsepower to like drag this to a really enjoyable level of just four big dudes, not four monsters, but like three monsters and a Superman, like battling it out, throwing each other all around, tossing each other through tables, doing all sorts of shit. You get a whole bunch of Lesnar being vulnerable, which is like my favorite thing in the world, and it's just a fun match, really fun. The worst parts of it, I think, drag it down to the point that it doesn't make my top 100, but it's real good.
This is like a really, really good Marvel movie for a lot of people, I guess.
Sure.
That would probably be the equivalent of it.
That is a good way to put it.
For me, like, the first few minutes are really fun. Like, absurdly fun.
Yeah.
But I think the problem with it, and something that I just have a problem, I've had a problem with Brock's matches in general in 2017, is that after a really good first 2 minutes or so, first three, or even in this case, like maybe first 10, are all really good. They just teeter off rather quickly. This one was because of a stretcher job, which I'm just tired of when it comes to Brock Lesnar. Like,
sure,
you can find other ways to hide him other than doing a stretcher job. Like, figure something else out. You don't need to keep doing this. But, yeah, it was fun. But the Brock Lesnar stretcher job and the action following it, I don't think were that good. Mm-hmm. The period where Brock is out, I think, doesn't really help anything either.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't say this is the best match for any of these four men in 2017.
I do like the fact that they kind of repeat the WrestleMania 31 sequence, which is a cool touch.
Super cool.
But yeah, there's a lot wrong with this match for me, and even then, I don't think like the first few minutes that people are like going gaga for hit me the same way it hit other people.
Totally, totally.
All right, so my number 101. You might have this match higher. I don't know how you feel about these two together, but it's Keith Lee versus Donovan Dijak from Evolve 81.
No, none of their matches from 2017 made my list.
All right. This is the one that got most people talking. Sure. Other than the PWG match.
I was like, I don't know. This didn't get 5 stars.
Here's the thing. Like, to me, like, if you watch indie wrestling, like, you already knew about these guys after this match.
Yeah.
Like, if it's like, it's not my fault that Dave Meltzer, like, hadn't really seen Keith Lee or Dijak like that before.
Yeah.
So, but I do think this is kind of like their defining match, even if I don't think it's their best one. And stole the show from Mania Weekend on a weekend where I thought there were a lot of really good matches. Mm-hmm. I thought this was like probably the defining one for both guys that weekend. I know you like the Ricochet Keith Lee match a lot.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that way later. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know you'll have that. But great action. People really buying into all of this. All these near falls and these big guys doing insanely athletic things and not looking necessarily sloppy either. It looks pretty crisp for the most part.
Yeah.
I think Heath Lee finally hits one of those moonsaults. Which is
don't remember.
Yeah, I think he actually hits a moonsault on Dijak. Okay. Which, if you watch Keith Lee matches, whenever he goes for a moonsault, he never hits it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really neat. And Keith Lee won, which was, you know, the right decision there, obviously. As opposed to him, like, losing the day before to Ricochet.
Don't tell Gabe that.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this match. So for some people, it might even be like a top 10 contender, because it was like that exciting, action-filled kind of match that somebody might just adore.
It was like super short too, wasn't it? It was like 12 minutes maybe?
Yeah, it wasn't that long.
Like a good use of time, yeah.
And to me, I might say the last good Keith Lee versus Donovan Dijak match I've seen.
Because
I didn't like their following match in Evolve, and I didn't like the PWG match.
Did you see their AEW one?
I didn't see their AEW match, and I didn't see their new one.
Not good.
Alright. Alright, you're 100. By the way, the 100 proper.
Finally, we can start the podcast.
This is all the pre-show. Yeah, we're beyond wrestling now.
Don't. I'm co-opted, remember? Don't put me in this situation.
Hey, Drew,
my number 100 is a match I don't know that you'll have it higher. I know it's a match you enjoyed. And it's a match that I wish I could put higher, but I just can't force myself to do it. It's John Skyler versus Corey Hollis in the unsanctioned match from PWX Unsanctioned.
Yeah, I do have it higher.
Okay, we'll talk about it later then. Your 100.
My 100, something that you probably have higher. Fred Yeah versus Jonathan Gresham from Nova Pro, the great Grabsby.
Yeah, I have this way higher.
All right. My 99, then, is a... making a last minute decision here to take something off my list and put something else on.
Hold up. You're live editing your list right now?
Yes.
Okay.
So, for anyone that's curious,
are you going to put on Chuck versus Zach?
No.
That would be so funny.
So, for anyone that's curious what this match previously was, it was Dr. Wagner versus Psycho Clown.
Oh, good match. Mania.
Really good match. But, I want to replace it with Mark Davis versus Kaylee Ray from Fight Club Pro, the Infinity Tournament.
Didn't get to see it.
Now, on the surface, you might be like, why the fuck would you replace Dr. Wagner Jr. versus Psycho Clown? Dr. Wagner Jr. lost his mask. Like, oh, yeah. Like, come on, that's big. Like, that's cool and all, but I watched that match spoiled, so it didn't really hit me
that's
the same
cool
way.
And all. Most emotional. You can make an argument that was the biggest event to happen in pro wrestling in 2017. But Quentin Moody, quote, that's cool and all.
But this Mark Davis Kaylee Ray match, though.
Sure.
Anyway, the reason why is this is like fantastic professional wrestling. This Mark Davis Kaylee Ray match on this Infinity Tournament show is this big, badass, hard-hitting, hard-throwing, charismatic, dangerous, but like also like lovable guy in Mark Davis going up against this like phenomenal, fiery, high-flying daredevil in Kaylee Ray, who will go up against anything and doesn't really show any fears. Mm. And Kaylee Ray takes it straight to Mark Davis right off the bat. There's no wasted motion here. Mark Davis he emerged as maybe the best base in wrestling. Like, Pete Dunne is up there, Cesaro, obviously a whole bunch of lucha guys, even like a Fred Yehi is up there, Susumu, obviously. But, like, Mark Davis is up there, and he takes Kaylee Ray's offense phenomenally well. And other than just, like, selling and bumping and basing for Kaylee Ray just super fucking well, when he gets on offense, it looks fucking brutal. He looks like, it's weird. Because you might see some of his stuff and be like, oh, he's trying to be like Claudio. He's trying to be like Steen. He's trying to be like Hero. And like, you see elements of these different guys in, like, his matches sometimes. Mm-hmm. But this match, he comes across like fucking peak Samoa Joe. Like, this guy is fucking incredible.
You know how to hook me in.
Like, he is this... he allows Kaylee Ray almost to get in so much offense, But once you piss him off after, like, having, like, this cool, calm, fun-loving demeanor, then he's like, all right, you got to die now.
Cool.
And he hits he gets an awesome-looking, close your eyes and count the fuck, and,
Which, to explain, is a pile driver.
Yes.
A big, crazy one.
A pop-up pile driver looks absolutely frightening, and it's a great sprint, only goes about, like, 6-7 minutes, maybe.
Mm, okay.
Maybe even shorter, honestly, than I'm remembering. But it's a damn fun match, and one that, looking at my list, I forgot to put on, but I feel like that match is just fucking great, and I would have felt weird if I didn't talk about it.
I hear you. Needed 123 matches on your list.
Technically, we didn't talk about Dr. Wagner's universe Psycho Clown.
So I guess not. I don't know. If I wanted to talk about it, I should have had it on my list, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was your 99, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my 99 was I think for the first time on this podcast, it was a women's match. I think it's the first time we've brought up a match that was all women. And it was Shayna Baszler taking on Penelope Ford from Beyond Wrestling's Go With The Flow.
All right. I did not see this. I don't think I saw anything from this show. So tell me about it.
Good show. This had Riddle and Keith in the main event where Drew booked it before Gabe ever did. But this follows the opener that saw Joey Janela face somebody. I don't remember who. And this is in the midst of the Joey Janela-Matt Riddle feud. And after the match, Matt Riddle comes out with Chuck O'Neill, and they both attack Janela. And Penelope sprints out, being Janela's girlfriend, to, you know, protect her guy. And Shayna Baszler, good friend of Matt Riddle's, being that they're both former UFC fighters. I guess everybody's just a fan of friends in the octagon.
If you did MMA, you're friends, pretty much.
I guess so. But she follows Penelope out, you know, like cock of the walk, like strutting her stuff. And it segues right into this match where, like, Penelope is, A, just so out of Shayna's league, like, former gymnast, very talented herself, can hold her own against the likes of, like, the Hit Squad, but, like, doesn't really know how to approach someone like Shayna Baszler. And B, she's so frazzled from Janela getting attacked that she just can't put up a fight in this match. And so Shayna squashes her, basically, and really fucks with Penelope, really fucks with the crowd in an enjoyable way. Like, really, this is probably the most heat any match I've seen from Melrose Memorial Hall has gotten, which is, like, it's a quiet building, and it's a building they never fill up all the way, but, like, it's certainly commendable. And I like it because Penelope, like a lesser wrestler would have tried to stay 50-50 with someone like Shayna in this situation, but Penelope just takes her lumps, and it was just a really good use of time, and I enjoyed it.
All right. My 98 is a match that I loved from a guy that inexplicably, I can't really tell you what clicked for me this year, but
okay,
you know, he'll have another match on my list later. Flash Morgan Webster versus Keith Lee from Progress Chapter 57.
This is a match you told me repeatedly to watch, and I repeatedly ignored you, I guess. So tell me about it.
Flash had a really good Mike Bird match earlier in the year.
Yeah.
But this was the one in Progress, specifically. He has a match and attack that I'm going to talk about later that I really liked.
Okay.
But in Progress, this is really the match where I'm like, oh my god, I might actually like Flash Morgan Webster now.
Did you not previously?
No. And pretty much my thing with Flash is that, like, he is very athletically talented and gifted. But to me, he was like the embodiment of, like, cool, unique moves with no real personality to show off, no real emotion to get behind or anything like that. You can say he has a cool look.
Sure.
But other than that, I don't really think there's anything with Flash to latch onto. He seems like a solid dude, but, like, yeah, there was nothing really there to latch onto as a performer. And I think this year he had more emotional matches than he's had previously.
Totally.
And this one in particular, he's going up against this big mount of a man in Keith Lee, and Keith Lee is obviously used to facing guys smaller than him, but not too many flyers, I would say. Like, obviously, Ricochet. Sure.
Leo Rush.
Leo Rush.
Sammy Guevara.
I'm not really sure Leo was a flyer, but he's athletic. He's not that guy.
All right, I guess. Sure.
Yeah, Sammy is a flyer. But yeah, whenever Keith Lee faces a flyer, I do think that's where he's at his best, because he gets to catch these guys in ways that even like the strongest people don't really do.
Yeah.
Like, there's like some Michael Elgin, Brian Cage kind of shit, what he's doing to Flash Morgan Webster.
Gross.
You know, going out, catching him on a suicide dive and just like holding him under his armpits like he's a child.
Mm-hmm.
Flash looking confused. Like,
is that where you put armpits? Fuck that up. No, God, continue. I was going to say, is that where you put children, Quentin? But I completely fucked it up. I'm just going to stop recording.
But just holding him like he's a child in the air, Flash looking like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
I like Keith as a heel, more like him as a babyface. You know, flip side of Dijak. I think Keith, when he's menacing and controlling and kind of dismissive and condescending, is when he's at his best.
Sure.
And I think that's when he's at his most brutal. And Keith Lee, for as good as his flashy stuff is, he can hit hard as hell. And I think his brutal looking stuff is among the best in wrestling. Like his double chop looks fucking brutal, sounds disgusting.
Everybody does a bicycle knee. He might do the best one.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. But he just throws around Flash, splashes on him, lays on him, hits him hard, chops him, and Flash is just doing like this awesome selling, bumping around. And for the first time, I feel sympathy for Flash, because he's facing this big, larger than life in both ways human being, and Keith Lee. And he just keeps fighting and fighting and fighting and trying to find a way to make this work. And the crowd gets behind him too. It's the most emotion I've ever heard behind a Flash Morgan Webster match. And he tries, and whenever he mounts his offense, Keith Lee takes it well. He bases well for a guy that big.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, Flash Morgan Webster gets taken down, and it's a match I love. It's a match that made me realize I should probably maybe give Flash Morgan Webster another chance after a few years of just not really knowing what to do with the guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really, really love this match. I understand if it doesn't hit people the same way, but for me, watching this show, which is a very good show, but I really, really enjoyed that match.
Hmm. That was your number 98, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. My number 98, both of these next two are actually really emotional, really sentimental matches for me, which is something you're going to hear a lot in my top 100. And my number 98 is a match that also contains Keith Lee. It's Keith Lee taking on Chris Hero from Evolve 76.
Hmm. All right. That's an interesting one, because I don't think you have the Chris Zach match.
I don't. No.
Okay. So I guess, why is this Keith Hero match on your list?
Well, in comparison to the Hero Zach one, I think I just didn't know what to do with that. So it's not necessarily just thinking that this one was better. It's just that this one, I could actually have my hands around it. I could really grasp onto it, whereas I couldn't with that other one. But this one, this was like, I watched this just a couple of weeks ago, and it was the first Chris Hero match I had seen in about a year. I hadn't seen Chris Hero work since Beyond's Overnight Sensation, which was like early December 2016. So I skipped out on the rest of his December stuff and all of his January matches at the time, and then I didn't get around to anything until December of 2017. And then booting up this show and fast-forwarding to the main event, and hearing Chris is awesome for the first time in a year after, like, a real disappointing year for Cassius Ohno. He sort of turned it around towards the end, but, like, a good 9-10-month streak of just, like, underwhelming and frustrating matches. And hearing this awesome song for the first time in almost a year, after one of my guys, like, did what was best for his career and left me in sort of a, and a place in which to swallow a bitter pill. Hearing that song for the first time in a while was really good. And this match was really cool. Obviously, it's marred by two terrifying equipment malfunctions in the rings, or the ropes breaking twice. But watching Chris like adjust to that and completely take control of the match and guide it along in a way that is fun and refreshing and a little mean and 100% within the realm of his character. It was watching a master work at his craft and getting to see that for the first time in a while after a year in which I didn't get to see that. It was really a nice thing.
Yeah. Other than like the two rope breaking spots, keep in mind that this show also had Peter Casa eventually having his career ended due to these same ropes.
Has not wrestled since, to my knowledge.
Yeah. So Chris Hero, thankfully, didn't meet the same fate Peter Casa did.
Keith could have died. He was doing a moonsault.
Yeah, Keith, for some reason, I don't know why he did this.
Not a smart idea, yeah.
Chris, I would imagine. Keith might be a dumb guy. I hope someone talks to him after, like, Keith, what the fuck was that, buddy? But yeah, it's a good match. Reminiscent of, like, when the rope broke and the Hero Claudia match in PWG that goes, like, 40 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Hero is such a professional, and he can do so many things that, you
like, know. What he does here is, like, so the rope, the first rope breaks when he's running the ropes, and he doesn't, like, fall out of the ring or anything. He just teeters there for a second and is like, whoa! And everyone, like, gathers their breath for a second, and then Chris is like, hey, let's get this rope out of here. And he's, like, talking to the ref and to Keith, and he's being real jovial about it. He's like, yeah, teamwork, woo! And he uses the opportunity as Keith is, like, throwing the last turnbuckle out of the ring to, like, clobber him with an elbow. And he starts beating him up, and he takes him out to the floor, and they do a brawling sequence. And Chris, like, bullies the referee and is like, you're not counting me out. This is my last weekend. You're not doing this to me. And he does all sorts of moves, like does this big senton onto Keith on the floor, and then he slides back in the ring and is like, ref, count him out. And
it's a great hero performance. It really is.
Such a great hero performance. And like to see that for the first time in a year was just, it did my heart good.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. I think I watched this show after the fact. I don't think I got to watch it live.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, watching it, I was kind of, like, disappointed that the rope broke in one of Heroes matches. But, like, for the guy that's, like, Mr. Indie Wrestling, that's kind of, like, a fitting way to go out, too.
It really is. And Keith was good in it, too. Like, it wasn't just the Chris Hero
show. Other than that dumb moonsault.
Totally. Keith, my man, what are you doing?
All right. Another match I'm sure you have higher. Freddie Hebb versus Jonathan Gresham from Nova Pro 11th Dimension.
Damn, you had these really close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have it way higher, yeah.
Okay, go ahead then.
For my number 97, is that correct? Yeah. So the second part of my sentimental 1-2 combo is the last ever Katsuyori Shibata versus Tomohiro Ishii match from the New Japan Cup.
All right, go ahead.
Did you see this?
Yeah, I saw it. I liked it. I thought it was like lesser than a lot of their matches previously. But
see, that's the thing. It's like,
you have the sentimental attachment to it.
Well, yeah. Well, let me explain too that like, I've mentioned before I was homeless in 2013 for a while, and I've mentioned before like how watching wrestling was a big help during that period of time, most notably. Dragon Gate's Kobe World Hall show, where my man Shingo Takagi ended Shima's like 2-year reign with the Dreamgate belt. And hand in hand with that was the G1 Climax that year, which was fucking awesome. And included the first Katsuyori Shibata versus Tomohiro Ishii match, this little like 6-minute sprint that like blew my mind. And it was something that like helped to drag me back into wrestling and to help me just like get over the fact that like, cool, I ate out of a dumpster for like a month and a half there. Like that sucked. And so that matchup like always remained special to me. even when my taste changed over the years, and even when I think these two maybe changed as performers, that's less concrete. And then coming in here, I didn't watch this until well after the fact, well after Shibata's injury. And to see them have what you described as a lesser match, and I totally understand that this is probably like the least of all their matches, but to have a match that's not so hard-hitting, that's not so destructive, mm-hmm. like just a couple of weeks before Shibata nearly died, and getting to see these guys match up one last time, but in a way that I don't think, you know, helped to hurry along one man's near fatal accident. It was nice. Like it was a nice little thing.
Yeah, I can fully understand and appreciate where that comes from.
Uh-huh.
My number 96 is Ember Moon versus Asuka from NXT TakeOver Orlando.
Yeah, I have both of them higher. Okay, yeah, I have this one higher.
All right, you can go ahead then.
My number 96 is a Hideki Suzuki taking on Takuya Nomura from the Kaki Ride Show, Masahito Kakihara, recent New Japan Rumble winner, his produce show from, when was it? It was in August. Did you see this?
No, I did not get to see this.
You should watch this show. It is like one of the best shows of the year. Like super breezy, totally fun. I loved it. And this was one of the best matches from it. Suzuki and Nomura are both BJW guys and had a singles match in Big Japan earlier in the year. It was very good too. Everyone should go see that. But this one was a little different in that Nomura came into this with a game plan and stuck to it and nearly beat Hideki Suzuki, a guy who's like twice as old as him and maybe eight times more experienced, nearly beat him several times, like got really fucking close. And it was a cool match in which you see Suzuki go from, oh shit, like this kid's gonna beat me, to, okay, let's see what this kid can do. Which is helped by the fact that by this point in time, Suzuki and Nomura are in the same stable in Big Japan. So it's like the leader of the stable being like, all right, let's let this kid stretch his legs a little. And it's just really cool to see Nomura like ply his trade and Suzuki let him run around for a while before smashing him down. And it's just like high quality grappling. It's not pro wrestling rules. It's like a, UWFI. Mm-hmm. It was UWFI rules, so they have like points and whatnot. But it was really enjoyable, and like I really loved it.
Right. Number 95 is Drew Galloway versus Zema Ion, or DJZ, whatever you want to call him, from AW's Homecoming show.
I didn't watch this. Heard so many things about it. Don't like Drew Galloway. Why don't you tell me why he had such a good match?
As someone that liked Drew Galloway a lot during his run on indies, I think whenever he gets a chance to match up with a smaller guy like he did against like Speedball in the 2015 Bola, mm-hmm. who has like innovative, unique offense, and he can be this big mountain for somebody to climb, that's when that is the best. And that's what this was, facing DJZ, who's equally as athletic and fun and innovative and unique. There's also sort of a coming out party for DJZ, who had a really, really strong 2017.
Really did, yeah.
Sucks that he got hurt to end the year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he got hurt. But
didn't he get hurt at the end of last year? He had like some crazy spine injury or something?
I don't know if it was a spine thing or if it was like the like ruptured colon one or like
something. I don't know.
Yeah, one of those things. But DJZ, who had to like keep fighting back from injuries that, a lot of these just being freak accidents.
Sure, yeah.
So I can't really say the guy's injury prone. But totally. Like just watching him go out there and do these great-looking DDTs and bump around for Galloway. And mm-hmm. Galloway does like a Beal throw all the way across the goddamn ring.
Nice.
I swear to you, it is like not like from like not he starts from the middle. He actually mm-hmm. is all the way at the opposite corner and tosses him all the way to the other one. It's fucking incredible looking. Just a really fun action-packed match. Not necessarily a sprint, but there's a lot of fun to be had here. Mm. Drew Galloway eventually puts him away, but for a lot of people, this is what put DJZ on the map for 2017. Mm-hmm. As a guy that post TNA still has a lot to offer. And I'm glad that I saw this, and I'm glad that eventually DJZ got more opportunities to show what he's made of, because mm-hmm. if this match was any indication, like, he is a talented guy that should be like a mid-card, upper mid-card, maybe even main event level guy in so many promotions.
Totally.
So you can go ahead there.
That was your 95, right?
Yep.
Okay, my number 95. It's kind of astonishing. No, wait, you brought him up earlier. Never mind. Silly me. My number 95 is Walter, taking on a guy you brought up just a few minutes ago, Mike Bird, in Progress's Cologne show.
All right. I like this match, but I didn't love it, so tell me about it.
So, you introduced me to Mike Bird, actually. You had me watch his match against Zack Sabre Jr. 2016 against Zack Sabre Jr. in Attack Pro Wrestling. And I liked him back then. Like, I thought he was sort of a cool, like, lanky, underdog, babyface kind of guy. And then in 2017, he reinvented himself completely into, like, this bruiser who, like, he's only, like, 5'9", but he punches above his weight so much. Like, he's a guy who, this is an Atlas title number one contenders match, and, like, he totally fits within the realm of that title. He's a dude who carries himself so well and is a great, like, heavyweight style wrestler, despite not, in my opinion at least, being a heavyweight. The thing is, though, he's no Walter. Mm. And so Walter comes in here, beats the shit out of him, and Mike Bird just keeps on trucking. And it was a match that provided a lot of, like, quality Walter-style wrestling, and one particularly good character moment that I loved, where Bird chops Walter pretty late in the match, and it's a really good chop, and he's thinking that it's going to do more damage than it actually does. And he can tell, he's not even looking up at Walter after he chops him. He's, like, looking down at the mat. But he can tell that the dude's bristling up at the chop, and it's going to just unleash on him. And there's this great shot from a ringside camera looking up at Mike Bird as he's looking down at the mat, and he's just like, ah, fuck it. I gave it my best shot.
That's like something that Walter's been really good at this year. I've seen what the David Starr match is, where David Starr will throw a fantastic chop. If he threw it against somebody else, like, they'd be selling the hell out of it.
Anybody else.
But Walter's just like, okay, you did this to yourself.
Yeah, and he just gives it back tenfold, and it's marvelous. It's probably not a match that's going to hit anybody else the way that it hit me, but, like, really impressed me. Became a big fan of Mike Bird in 2017, and this match was a big reason why.
Well, since you're such a big Mike Bird fan, you might have my number 94 or higher.
Oh boy,
Mike Bailey versus Mike Bird from Attack Pro Wrestling: Body Slams and Control and Money and Power.
I forgot to watch this.
No, you didn't. You watched this match.
I did not watch this. Don't tell me what I watched, Quinn.
might have been Tim that watched it then.
Yes. You're confusing the other one of the four people that we are.
Oh, God. I'm shocked that you did not watch this. Okay.
I meant to, and I just slipped my mind, I guess.
Well, on paper, you were really excited to watch this.
So excited to watch it.
And I knew it was going to be good too. Not in the way I was expecting, though.
Okay.
See, these two beat the shit out of each other.
Surprise.
But not in, like, there really wasn't any middle ground. There wasn't a lot of, like, mat wrestling here. There wasn't a lot there other than, like, the fact that they just beat living shit out of each other with chops and kicks and brutal looking spots. God, I believe there might have been a figure four roll to the outside spot.
Where, so popular in 2017.
And looked absolutely brutal. And I think it went on a hardwood floor. So like the thud it made was very disgusting too.
Yeah.
But yeah, just Bird and Bailey beating the absolute tar of each other. I love it when Speedball gets to let loose on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that can, like, you know, keep up with what he can do and how hard he can kick. And Mike Bird is someone that he'll take the punishment, but he'll give it right back.
Yep.
And it made for an awesome, awesome, like, kind of like violence party, so to speak. It was totally great stuff. You should really watch it. I will. Shocked and disappointed that you did not watch it.
Just so much wrestling at the end of the year that I had to catch up on.
Right, what's your number 94?
It's a match you brought up just a couple of minutes ago. It's Asuka versus Ember Moon from NXT Orlando.
All right. I always felt like I was higher on Asuka's matches than a lot of people, obviously, other than you. Like,
sure.
I don't really feel like people were really giving Asuka her credit. And this is another one where I watched this match. Didn't watch it live because I think I might have been at work. I don't know. So I watched it later. Remember. Came back after watching it and went into the Slack chat like, holy shit, that was fucking great. That finish was great. Asuka was awesome in it. Like, great character stuff. Why is nobody talking about this match? Like, why is nobody ever talking about Asuka's character work? And I was completely stunned after how good she was in that match that people just weren't talking more about it. But you can chime in here, too, because I adored this.
Well, I mean, even aside from the character work, this is just, like, a really high-quality, like, Joshi-style, big floaty bumps, big dramatic strikes, like, whole bunch of yelling, whole bunch of running around, hair flying all over.
It is very much a Joshi match.
Yeah, and it's got some foibles in that. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of, like, how they do everything in Joshi, but really good. And then on top of that, it starts off this like interesting character turn for Asuka, in which you've seen her for a year now as this like bored goddess, like milling around in the realm of humans, and she's finally found an opponent who can really take her to the limit, but she doesn't want to show it because she's afraid of like where that leads. And she, and Ember Moon like never ends up beating her, but like Asuka's got to pull out a bunch of tricks in order to do it. And she does it here by the means of like shoving the referee into the ropes when Ember's going for her what you call the gimmick? The eclipse, her diving Stone Cold Stunner. By God. And it's a really cool thing where like she like crouches her on the top rope and then hits her with a buzzsaw kick and that's it. And afterwards she's just like guffawing at the world, at like the absurdity of it all, like at the referee for being like, oh, you were abetting my cheating. But it's so interesting to see the cracks in her armor.
Yeah. It was a real subtle story and one that like goes back to 2015. When she first debuted, she is literally scaring Emma and Dana Brooke shitless. Of them. Like, they're, like, scared. Completely shook at that possibility of facing her. And then she transitions then, obviously, like squash matches and whatever else. That transition into meeting Bayley and looking unstoppable there. Facing Nia Jax, having a match against Mickie James, other stuff in between there. But in 2017, you had people like Peyton Royce and Billie Kay and Ember Moon and Nikki Cross who were not afraid to step up to Asuka, and Asuka having to find ways to survive. Mm-hmm. She couldn't just get by on like these mind games and everybody being afraid of her anymore. She had to like find out ways to eke out victories. And I thought that was a very subtle story they sold, one a lot of people probably didn't appreciate fully. But, you know, I loved it. And I do have the Brooklyn match higher, as do you. But,
Same, yeah,
it's fucking fantastic stuff. All right. My number 93. I'm not really sure how you feel about any of these matches, but this is the only one from this series that I have. Walter versus Matt Riddle from Progress, Chapter 51.
Which one is this?
This is the title change in Birmingham.
Okay. I have one of them on my top 200. It's not, it's way lower than this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember which one it is. So why don't you tell me about it?
All right. So Walter and Matt Riddle beat the shit out of each other.
Do they now?
Like, you know, this may be a development, but they really hit each other hard in all these matches.
Mm.
Maybe harder than Walter and David Starr do, honestly. But I think this one is different because Walter comes in and he is not fucking around. He already lost his first shot at the Elicido on my chapter 46, which was a fantastic top to bottom show. But he came up short there, and he earned his way back with the aforementioned Walter versus Mike Bird match we talked about in Progress Cologne. And he comes in just ready to wreck shit. And Matt Riddle obviously isn't going to take it lying down. He adores the Atlas title and he'll fight tooth and nail to keep it. But Walter, on this day, in this city, but keep in mind, Birmingham was also the first, was also the city where the first Atlas title change took place, where Matt Riddle beat Rampage Brown.
Oh, interesting note.
Yeah. So they return to the city, and Matt Riddle loses his championship, which is an interesting little touch there. Brutal, hard-hitting stuff. Sometimes can be a, might not have a lot there in the smarts department for a lot of people. But I do admire the fact that it's just unabashedly we're going to go out there and beat the shit out of each other. And there's a lot of Matt Riddle matches like that this year. A lot of Walter matches like that this year. But I think the emotion, the fire that Matt Riddle has, and I think the way Walter wrestled, you can just tell these two just love wrestling each other. And I think that shines through, and it's just awesome to watch.
You're right. Chapter 46 was a pretty stacked show. This, did you say this was your highest of the series?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was about it. Like, it just, it never hit me the way that I thought it would. And the obvious thing that anyone who knows me would say is like, oh, well, you just don't like Riddle, which is sort of true. But like, I felt that Riddle had a very strong year, someone who's definitely making my top 10 wrestlers of the year. And like, I thought he wasn't doing anything particularly different against Walter. Their first match in WXW, I didn't enjoy, partially due to the fact that it bucks the trend of what Walter was doing in that tournament specifically, and I felt that that was just like an unnecessary deviation. But these matches, I don't know, they just never clicked with me.
I do kind of think they're different from what Riddle usually does, because
Walter too.
Yeah. Even like the only person that really goes blow for blow with Riddle like that is Tracy Williams. So
weird, but yeah, totally.
Yeah, the only person that really just goes at Riddle as hard as Walter does is Tracy Williams. So to see Riddle go up against this big dude who hits just as hard as him, I think was an interesting dynamic, as opposed to like Riddle always being, he can knock you out at any time.
Yeah.
Walter is like, all right, like, it's going to take a lot more than that to take me down. So I just like the dynamic they have there. I do think in a year full of a whole bunch of series and trilogies and whatever else that just got lost in the shuffle, and maybe if people went back and watched it, like, they'd have a different opinion of it, because arguably both guys had better series in 2017. But, yeah, I enjoyed this a lot.
Okay, so my number 93 is a match you may or may not have higher. It was a match that was... it heralded a return to form in a promotion that you and I both love. It was the Verzerk versus Maximum versus Overgeneration three-way trios match from Dragon Gate's September 5th show.
I have this really fucking high.
Okay, we're going to talk about it later. So I'll talk about my man Smith Garrett once more. And this is his highest ranked match, sadly.
Are sure your number one isn't there?
No. He sadly just didn't wrestle a whole lot because of a serious injury that may or may not be fake. I don't know. CWF is weird that way.
It doesn't help that like you're kind of like friendly with a lot of people there. Those are like, you don't know when you're getting worked or not.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. But anywho, this is him taking on X-Cyrus from CWF Mid-Atlantic's Tell All Your Friends, which was January 21st.
This was a fun little rivalry.
I didn't necessarily enjoy how it ended, but this kickoff match was bananas. Technically, I don't think it was a match. It starts with Vic Sires coming out for a scheduled match against Smith Garrett, and he's talking a whole bunch of shit on the entrance ramp, and he's going on about how he cost Smith Garrett his shot at the, I think it was the TV title at Battlecade. and he nearly broke Smith Garrett's neck. And Smith ain't taking none of that shit and comes out from the locker room and jumps him from behind. And I'm pretty sure they never enter the ring at the same time. And each one of them collectively spends perhaps a minute in the ring during this whole encounter. Instead, they just brawl all over the sportatorium, doing a whole bunch of punching, doing a whole bunch of kicking. At one point, Smith Irish whips Xyrus into the corner post on the floor, and Xyrus takes a delightful bump, a bump that makes me laugh every time I see it. Just incredible physical comedy in professional wrestling. Eventually, Smith Garrett beats Xyrus so bad that he fakes out joining him in the ring and just walks into the locker room, grabs his bag, and leaves. Stutzy goes after him, Brad Stutz, who's like on-screen general manager, I suppose you'd say, in CWF. You can hear Stutzy yelling from the locker room, like, "Don't you walk away from me." Good on Stutzy for projecting that, because I wasn't sure that, like, he thought it could make it onto the camera from the locker room. But it certainly does. And Smith Garrett's, like, in the ring, fired up. And Stutzy comes back, and it's like, he's gone. Like, he took his bag, and he's gone. And and Smith's like, you better get shit. Smith Garrett's like, you better go get him. I'm not leaving this ring until I beat the shit out of Xyrus. And
which I just want, like Smith Garrett be getting his bag and getting in this car too.
Well, that's, he eventually does.
I know. I'm just, like, that's just hilarious,
like,
to me.
Smith. Like, Stutzy tells him, like, he's in his car, he left. And Smith's like, all right, if he's not coming to me, I'm going to come to him. And by this point, like, there's a bunch of rookies in the ring who are, like, trying to defuse the situation because Smith Garrett is all sorts of fired up here. And when he goes to stomp off after Xyrus, the rookies are like, hold up now, and put their hands on his chest to, like, just stop him and keep him in place. And Smith Garrett's like, motherfuckers. And he starts swinging, starts slamming, beats the shit out of all these rookies, and is like, I'm going to go beat up Xyrus, and stomps out of the ring, and it's 5 stars.
The best match of all time.
Best match ever.
Shinya Hashimoto could never.
I loved it. Like, it was perfect pro wrestling to me. And if it was an actual match, it probably would have been, like, top 10 for me.
All right, my number 92 is a match I'm not even sure you saw, but it's Fred Yehi versus Anthony Henry from Style Battle, Season 1, Episode 5.
I don't remember if I watched this one, because I watched, like, a bunch of Fred Yehi stuff all at once, and it sort of bled together. I don't think I watched it.
All right, so Anthony Henry and Fred Yehi have had a whole bunch of matches this year, all pretty good, really good, some of them. This one had the added story of Anthony Henry being in, I think, almost all the Style Battles so far, if not all of them, and coming up short and not being able to win one yet. The last time these two faced, they went to a draw. So the story here, and earlier in the night, Anthony Henry had hurt his neck. So he's nursing a neck injury coming into this match and going up against someone as brutal, cerebral, unique, and just vicious offensively as Fred Yehi. You knew Fred Yehi was going to take advantage of it. So what we get here is a great neck-based attack from Yehi throughout most of the match. Mm-hmm. Great Anthony Henry selling, callbacks to their 30-minute draw. And just in general, a lot of drama, a lot of emotion for the fact that Anthony Henry is finally trying to get this win in Style Battle that has just avoided him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great action. He gets the victory. And, for Style Battle, which never really did anything, 20, 15 people at a show at most, I thought it was really cool, even with all that being said, that Anthony Henry's got to win a Style Battle. It was a really well-told story in that mm-hmm. respect. One that, like, nobody really cared about. But if you're watching Style Battle, if you're watching Anthony Henry's story in particular, if you're watching him on that show, it definitely hit all the right marks. Great selling, great action, a great match, great moment. Like, nothing really I can complain about there.
Is that stuff still up for free on FlowSlam?
I don't know. The fact that the site is still, like, active is so crazy, dumb. But it might be.
What a silly thing. So I'll do my 91 and then you can close this out. This is a match I'm not totally sure where you come down on. It's Brock Lesnar versus Samoa Joe from WWE's Great Balls of Fire.
This is the match I mean where, like, the first couple of minutes are, like, fucking incredible and then just kind of teeters off.
Uh-huh.
Like, I love the first, like, 2 minutes of this match.
It's a short match even then.
Yeah, it's like 7 minutes, I think.
Seven or eight, yeah.
I think it's like that 2 minutes is really fucking good. And then after that, I think it just either should... It hit the space between, like, you could argue that it should have ended in, like, 2 or 3 minutes.
Mm.
But then you could also say, like, they didn't just... You just didn't, like, use their time well after it. So I think that's where, I'm stuck there. And, like, you know, I enjoyed some of this match a lot, but as a whole, I think I was kind of let down by the last, like, 4 or 5 minutes of it.
Totally get it, but, like, I don't know, this was...
The build was fantastic, too. I should throw that in there.
Sure, totally.
The build and promos incredible. And the segments of them attacking each other, it was tremendous pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, almost, like, as perfect, like, pro wrestling build as you can get.
Yeah, even though they're not both guys who can... talk well. They're both guys who, like, carry themselves well in a big fight build.
The way they did it was, like, you know, 100% like UFC based, really.
Sure.
You know, yeah. For the, like, you know, the whole sit down.
Less homophobia, but yes.
Yeah. like a whole, like, if you've ever seen, like, the Jon Jones, Daniel Cormier, like, two satellite locations and they're talking each other for, like, you know, it's that kind of stuff where, like, they're threatening each other, talking shit, and, like, it's fully believable as Joe is really upset that Brock Lesnar is not taking him seriously. And he's telling him, I'm going to fuck you up. Like, you are laughing and you are thinking it's a joke. I'm going to fuck you up. And Paul Heyman, while Brock is laughing and shrugging it off and dismissing it, Paul Heyman's like, Brock, like... come on, buddy. He's serious, man.
Bruh.
He's serious, man.
Bruh.
Yeah, but, like, I love the build.
I mean, in a lot of ways, this was a match that was, like, made for me. You know, like, two of my all-time guys.
Oh, this is, like, a dream match for me. Like,
totally.
I didn't plan on watching this show at all. And then I thought about it, and I was like, 2005 me would probably kill for this. Even if Brock Lesnar, even if Brock Lesnar wasn't wrestling at that point, there was still, like, obviously, like, for, like, fresh memories, I'm like, I would kill for that match.
Like, you gotta do it just for, like, the shitty middle schooler you used to be. Like, I totally get you there. Like, this was a match that made me watch a WWE pay-per-view live, which I didn't do a whole lot in 2017. And it was, like, it gave me everything I wanted, maybe not as much as I wanted, but, like, this ain't 2005, and I'm realistic, you know? It gave me Joe being this unstoppable monster who's also, like, just super smart, who has, like, an incredible strategy and who executes it flawlessly. It gave me a vulnerable Brock Lesnar who is bumping around and selling around.
And turning many colors.
Oh, my God. All the colors. We were talking about it earlier today.
We had a pretty interesting Brock Lesnar discussion in general.
We really did. Earlier today in the... I guess we're calling it Wrestling with Friends now, but the WWF Slack chat.
Oh my God, we have a WWF Slack chat. I've come to this realization that this is the worst thing ever.
Yep. WWWF Slack chat. So in the Slack chat, we had a discussion earlier today about Lesnar's many health problems, and this was a match that I think used the reality of that well, in that Samoa Joe on the main roster in WWE has been all about the Kikina Clutch. And when he applies the move, which he does many times throughout this, Lesnar's turning all sorts of shades of ochre. And it's like, holy shit. Like, Joe's choking the breath out of him.
No,
like,
it will actually kill him.
Murder this man. There are points of this where Joe's, like, throwing knees to the midsection or, like, throwing punches to the gut. And it's, you can take that just as, like, as like working over a guy trying to wind him and then trying to apply a sleeper hold, like just sound strategy. When I first watched this, though, I was like, is he working Lesnar's
diverticulitis?
Diverticulitis?
I mean, he's a big MMA nurse, so I'm like, oh my God.
I'm like, is he targeting like the foot of large intestine he had removed? it's absurd and it's stupid. But like this match, even with all the shortcuts in the world, even with only being 8 minutes long, even with it being a very unhealthy Brock Lesnar past his prime Samoa Joe, like yeah. this was everything I wanted. Like it was. There's no finisher spam from Brock mm-hmm. Lesnar, which was like one of my biggest complaints for the past couple of years. It's a one and done F5, which is awesome. A whole bunch of like mean strikes from these two. A whole bunch of like meaty slams. Like it was like it wasn't perfect for me, but it was as good as that match could have been.
Yeah, I fully appreciate that, and like I think I like the match. I think I like it more than the Goldberg match, I would think, on some level, because I think even that match probably falls off way worse for me. I think I like it more than the four-way, and I definitely like it way more than the Braun match. Only Brock match I loved this year was the AJ match, which we can talk about way later when we get to like the upper part of our list.
Okay.
But yeah, like I enjoyed aspects of this. I enjoyed the first few minutes. I enjoyed the build. I enjoyed Brock Lesnar's vulnerability. I love Joe's, like...
working the diverticulitis. Like, it's the dumbest idea ever, but, like, for a minute, I was like, dude. Like,
Joe actually gonna rip his intestines out.
He's gonna shove his fist in his belly button and rip his intestines out.
I love Joe's viciousness and nastiness and just mm-hmm. continued attacks. Like there's a lot of it to love.
Yeah.
That's not the problem. It's just, you know, I just wish the last few minutes were as good as the match.
I hear you.
All right. Now the grand finale of this first part.
It's part one of four.
It hasn't been that long.
It really hasn't. Yeah.
Number 91 features one of your favorite wrestlers on the planet, David Starr.
Smith Garrett?
Up against a man that you loathe, Jordan Devlin from OTT Wrestle Pops.
Okay, I was thinking you were going to say Zach, and I was like, all right, we can talk about that, but you mean like someone I actually kind of hate.
Yep, David Starr, Jordan Devlin from OTT Wrestle
Pops. Is this your highest ranked Jordan Devlin match?
My only Jordan Devlin match.
Okay. I'm gonna let you finish, and then I'm gonna say some words.
Just so I can counteract everything Brock is going to say. Jordan Devlin is a fantastic professional wrestler, first and foremost.
Horseshit.
And he had an awesome year, facing a lot of gaining the moniker of Import Killer.
Not coming back tomorrow. Doing this yourself.
Facing guys like Speedball and Matt Riddle, Moose, Shane Strickland, and just having really fun, really good matches with all of these guys. And here comes David Starr, who's been in Europe so much this year. So he's pretty much like a regular. So it's like not even like a surprise when David Starr is in Europe.
Yeah.
But, you know, these two had a match at Fight Club Pro that I really enjoyed. And that showed flashes of maybe if they were given more time and more focus, it could be even greater. And lo and behold, in OTT, they go up there and get more time, get more focus, and they have a match that I really, really enjoy. Hard-hitting action, which you expect from David Starr, but I think Jordan Devlin holds up his end too. Deceptively hard hitter, I think he is. Jordan Devlin, obviously a really athletic guy, so he can pull out some flashy kicks and dives that I think make this more than just two guys beating the shit out of each other. Mm-hmm. I think David Starr's mouth gets busted open at one point, so that adds to the match too. There's a lot of kickouts, a lot of like big move, cover, shocked face kind of stuff. But
oh, good.
But it's in front of a hot crowd. I think it's two guys that have some pretty damn good chemistry. And it just goes to the whole story of Jordan Devlin working his way up before eventually getting the NLW title. Really, it's the match where Jordan Devlin, I guess, like officially became a babyface, is what I'm trying to say. It was like building.
I thought he was a baby. No, I'm thinking of Ryan Smile. My bad.
Like he was getting there after like the Moose match, but this was the one where David Starr gives him a kiss after the match. Like, in
gross. With a you better, mouth. David.
But yeah, this was like the real official Jordan Devlin face turn, and I thought it was just a great match to boot. But you can go ahead and say whatever you need to say and get the entire Irish wrestling community
yeah.
mad at
you. Yeah, all eight of them. Like, all right, so I'm going to preface this by saying I just don't get Jordan Devlin. Like, there's clearly something here that a bunch of people enjoy about him, and I just don't see it yet. I might never see it, but right here in this moment, I just have strong feelings due to the fact that I see his name plastered all over the fucking place. Maybe I just follow a high percentage of Irish wrestling fans.
It's not all over the place.
Maybe I just follow all eight of the Irish wrestling fans.
The only high-profile places he works are OTT and Fight Club Pro. Like, he's not in progress that much. He hasn't, like... Like, he hasn't showed up in PWG yet, which I think is probably possible.
Fuck you.
it's possible. Like, so, like, he really isn't, like, that whole high profile of a name yet.
Well, regardless of that, people treat him like a big fucking deal, okay. And I just don't get it. And it's not, like, it's not the big argument was, like, oh, people just saw him shit the bed in the UK tournament.
Which I think a lot of people actually came around, and, like, the people that were saying that for such a long time did go back.
I wouldn't know, but sure.
Yeah, I think people that did say that, they're like, all right, my bad, Jordan Devlin is actually good.
I mean, I thought he shit the bed there against a wrestler who, like, is known for only performing to his opponent's level, and for once was overperforming there.
Can I talk about how, like, in 2017, I realized I did not like Martin Stone at all.
Yeah, you and I had a rough relationship with Martin Stone this year, but I'll talk about him glowingly at least one more time throughout this series of podcasts. Not going to talk about Jordan Devlin glowingly. I don't get it. Like, I don't get why he is the big face of the Irish wrestling scene. I maybe it's just that he is, like, the most talented guy of a scene that is just breaking out, and he's not Ryan Smile.
Ryan Smile also isn't Irish. So.
Oh, is he not? I thought he was.
No, he's from Birmingham.
Okay, so my bad. I saw him there initially and heard about him there initially. Okay, that was my fault. So Jordan Devlin, just like the guy of the Irish wrestling scene, and fair fucks to him. Like, it's actually growing into something, like, really interesting and really worth watching, and I'm proud of those people.
Yeah, but selling, like, out a 2,000 seat venue three separate times this year.
In like 2 years after nothing, you know? Like, nothing 2 years ago. I don't get why Jordan Devlin is the best of that crew. I don't think he's the best of the crew by a long shot. He strikes me as the sort of guy who just made the right connections, impressed the right people, and sort of snuck into a place that, like, he didn't necessarily hang. He's like, you ever watch APW, the King of the Indies tournament, the thing that, like, preceded ROH?
Yeah.
That basically kicked off what we understand as independent wrestling. Mm-hmm. So there's all-timer people on that show. There's your American Dragons, your AJ Styles, your Low Keys, your Christopher Daniels. You got people who are about to be, like, huge fucking deals. Samoa Joe on that show too? You got Samoa Joe. You got Super Dragon, guys who are going to be big deals soon. You got guys who are, like, really talented but never made it to that next level, like your Bison Smith, your Doug Williams, your Frankie Kazarian, I guess. I like Frankie more than most people.
I think Vinny Massaro was on that show?
Vinny Massaro was on there. Wasn't going to bring him up because he's a current guy and I don't want to piss him off, but whatever. Vinny Massaro was there too. I've never seen that match, so I can't speak to what he was like in 2001. But you're running down this show, and you're like, okay, these are a bunch of people who in 2001 belonged on a show like this, a show that was meant to be like the best of the best, that was supposed to be the King of the Indies. And then you get to Scoot Andrews, who is like just a Florida dude.
Okay, all right. You're not going to call Jordan Devlin Scoot Andrews.
I'm saying he's the Black Nature Boy of 2017. That's what Jordan Devlin is the Scoot Andrews of the Irish wrestling scene. I don't understand why he was just the big deal to break out here, and he made his rounds, and he's getting all this hype, and I don't understand where it came from.
Okay, how much OTT do you watch?
I watched. We're going to pull it up right now. I'll pull up Cage Match, and I'm going to count the Jordan Devlin matches that I watched.
No, I'm talking about how many OTT shows have you seen in full?
Oh, in full, probably zero, because I skip around a couple of things.
Okay.
I'll watch all the King of the North matches, and okay. I'll watch, like, other stuff here.
And I will give you King of the North that you could say, like, they're better.
I like them a lot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm going to be honest with you. As someone that watches OTT, likes OTT,
sure.
There really aren't that many people better than Jordan Devlin that are native Irish guys.
Oh.
That's just the truth. Like, and they have like a whole crop of young guys that are very good now.
Yeah, like 14-year-olds. Like, what the fuck?
Scotty Andrews and Nathan Murray and other guys, like really talented people. But they're all super young, and they're all just now getting in, as opposed to Jordan Devlin, who's been an OTT guy for a while.
Yeah, he's been around. Like, he's not. He's like late 20s, right?
Yeah. And Jordan Devlin, for people that because was born following OTT, was a babyface for a while. Wasn't really getting over that well. They turned him heel.
Wonder why?
They turned him heel. He then goes out and starts having this run of great matches. And then that organically turns him babyface.
Yeah.
And which is needed because OTT is a promotion that relies heavily on bringing in imports. Mm-hmm. So if most of their top guys are English guys, you're bringing in a lot of American names too. Sometimes a Canadian, a speedball Mike Bailey. Like, there aren't that many Irish people put in prominent positions in OTT.
Sure.
So other than Kings of the North, Katie Harvey, I think, is Irish. I think she's Irish. Yes, she is. Okay. And Jordan Devlin, those are your core Irish members of the roster. So I get thinking that because OTT is bringing in these imports and all these other English people, that maybe among the people that they're bringing in, Jordan Devlin isn't as good. But in a burgeoning scene, I think he's very much among the top tier for right now. Will that last? Maybe not. I don't know. But for right now, I think Jordan Devlin fits perfectly. He's definitely among the best right now is what they have to
offer. And like that's perfectly fine.
And there is the hometown boy factor. Like, for a scene that like had next to nothing, or what people would call nothing to boast for years, other than having people like Finn Balor and Becky Lynch go out there and do great things in other promotions, there was no real Irish wrestling promotion to get behind. There wasn't like this big stuff to get behind. There was Irish Whip, but there wasn't. Jeez. Yeah, there was Irish Whip, but like there was nothing else really. So to see Jordan Devlin, a native guy, go out there and get this much steam and have these good matches, definitely has a lot of people like, you know, feeling very emotional that they're trying to latch onto.
I'm so happy for that. I don't understand what these people see in him. I don't like he's like, I'd almost compare him to Sunner Durson, who I think is way better in a somewhat similar role. It's not like the Birmingham scene is like way more developed than the Irish scene ever was, truthfully. But like young guy who gets a whole bunch of like people brought in to lose to him, and I think he's actually good.
Right.
And like let me put it this way, like if Jordan Devlin wasn't Irish, if he was from Iowa instead of Ireland,
mm-hmm.
nobody would talk about him.
I agree.
Like he'd be a guy that Dylan Hayes would make a thread about on the We Don't Know Wrestling forum that would get zero replies and six views, that would be it.
You know what? I think at best, if he's in the US indie scene and not in Ireland, he's probably like, I don't know, like JT Dunn or something. And JT Dunn isn't
sure.
And JT Dunn
JT Dunn's a great comparison. Another guy I don't like much.
And JT Dunn isn't bad, but like there's nothing really there to latch onto. So yeah, I see that. But again, there is just like a cultural significance thing that plays into it.
Something that I'm never gonna get. Yeah.
And I think that's kind of why, at some point, I guess I, like, overlook it. I'm not going to be as critical of him for that point.
Sure.
Because he does hold a very, very significant, like, cultural, like, regional significance to those fans and to that fan base. Mm-hmm. Because he's one of the first Irish people that you can really latch onto. Because Katie Harvey is a heel. Kings of the North are heels. So, when you have your...
A very specific sort of heel that is going to alienate half the fan base.
Exactly. So, Jordan Devlin and him turning babyface is something that they haven't had yet to latch onto. So, I think I understand, like, everything about it. If he was somewhere else, he would not stand out. He'd just be a mid-tier, maybe Northeastern kind of guy.
The JT Dunn comparison is incredibly apt.
So, like, I get all of that, but I do think for where he is, he fits that scene perfectly, and they give him back something, which is a ton of emotion during his matches. They're really invested in them, so he gets his matches elevated due to that, too. I get it, but...
That's a lot.
No, I'm prepared.
That's only really ending this podcast.
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you're prepared to, for Irish Wrestling Twitter to come after you.
Come at me. My handle is at not Brock Yonke. That's spelled NOTBROCKJAHNKE.
All right.
At me. DM me. My DMs are open.
But yeah, I guess that's how we're ending the podcast.
So stupid. We're going to do 3 more of these. And I'm already pissed off.
Because you have to talk about Jordan Devlin?
Yeah. Gets one and done, though.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at QT_Moody if you don't already. I don't understand how I could be here for over a year now. You don't follow me, so.
That is weird. We have found that is true, though. It's super weird.
Like, I don't know what's wrong with you. Do I have to make a separate Psychology is Dead Twitter account? Like,
I guess.
Come on, guys. But yeah, 3 more parts of this coming soon. This nearly went 3 hours, and I am scared at what we are going to do in the next 3 parts. So, thank you all for listening. See you on part 2. And get no love from them. I paid my own bills and came up with the illest shit. I was trying to find a way to get my family out of it. Spent my days in basements trying to write the motherfucking hit. Nowadays he's stumbling. They show such love to him. I shut it down to every show. We set the precedent. I'm just trying to show these niggas life is on some other shit. Keep your head high, smile when the trouble rumbling. I don't do what they say, it's unorthodox. Like Bear sharing porridge inside with Goldilocks. Like Ozzy with no sharing, he just call his parents. So fuck what I'm doing and fuck these damn critics. You should think for yourself, that shit is cancerous. Get my hair up, my fingers are fucking hair models. Middle finger, fuck the hair up at all the concerts. Maybe if I cared less, I'd wear a hairnet. But now my eyes, 10 million by 25. Dropped out a Lone Star, but flight from Lone Star. Was working a couple jobs and quit, became a star,